Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And again, Bob Bard's with me, my good friend from
Happy
Bard's
New Year.
Nursery. Happy New Year. Happy 2019.
Can you believe it? Man.
No.
Where'd 18 go?
Where did 17 go? Where did 15 go?
I know.
16, 14, 13. Take it all the way down.
It's amazing how fast.
Yeah, it goes by quickly.
Yes, it really does. But to all the listeners, Happy New Year to you, too.
Happy New Year to the listeners.
Yeah.
Everybody. No, 2019, I'm ready. I'm geared up. I don't know about you. I'm stoked. I'm optimistic about the 2019 spring season.
Me too.
And it will be here quicker than you'll know it.
It's starting to feel like it already. Today's going to be 52 degrees and sunny. You know, we worked all week. Not all week. We started on Wednesday, you know, back, and we were doing landscape jobs all week last week.
It's been rather nice. You know, the weather's been mild. It's been wet. You know, it's been a continuation of the moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows if it's going to continue on, if we're going to get any type of cooler weather, any polar vortexes. Who knows? But right now, with the mild weather, I'll take it. It's been very pleasant today. It's going to be 50 and sunny.
Yes.
You can't ask for a better day.
No, it's going to be a gorgeous day. So, if you're still one of those lazy ones who haven't cut some of your ornamental grasses and done some things like that, you may actually get lucky.
Are you calling people out and telling them that they're lazy?
Well, I'm one of them.
Did I just hear that?
I'm calling people out.
Let's
start the year off right. Let's just call everybody out.
Let's just say maybe a little procrastination. I don't know.
Well, see, I'm one of those. You know me. I mean, I'm always late to the party. So, it's going to be a gorgeous day.
That it is. And, you know, you just said something the other day. We had closed early for the New Year's holiday. And I was around the house. And Tina kind of inspired me to stay busy because she's been busy doing a lot of cleaning, actually. And I'm like, yes, stay the course.
Mm-hmm.
So
spring cleaning in the winter. That's good.
Yes, yes. A little early spring cleaning. So I'm very happy with that. So I thought, all right, I'm going to go out. And I had cut back my ornamental grasses.
Mm-hmm.
First time for me, because typically I'll just let them ride the winter out. I like to just enjoy the winter interest that they'll bring in the landscape, you know, especially when you get a snowfall. But sometimes, you know, when I do take it, you know, when I get around to cutting those back, the ornamental grasses is what Bob and I are talking about, or what we're talking about, I should say. I'm usually doing that sometime in March, and then things could start ramping up at the garden center. Then I don't always get to it,
right.
You know, when I'd like to. And then, you know, the weather comes into play too. You know, is it raining in March, or is it rather warm in March? Is it still cool in March? So the other day it was nice. I thought, all right, I'm going to cut these guys back. Took the rest of it around the back, put it in my fire pit, burned it, and
it was done.
And I was glad. I just kept peering outside. You know, I'm one of those kind of guys, I like to look at what I did.
So you're always looking out the window to go,
look how even that is. It wasn't like that. It was just like, yes, I'm glad that's finished.
You post a selfie?
No.
You didn't post a selfie after you did
it? I'm not that vain, Bob. I don't have to do that. Do you post selfies?
I do not. I'm not a selfie guy.
No.
Occasionally, every once in a while I have, you know, like in here or something,
right.
I've done that. But, you know, the reason I brought it up is,
right.
You know, we're always about what's bugging Bob. So a few weeks ago we were talking about what's bugging Bob. So, you know, I was out looking at houses yesterday, and specifically the Miscanthus sinensis, so the larger maiden grasses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at those, and this neighbor's got about six of them. They're huge. They're already fallen over from the heavy rains that we've had. In the neighbor's yard, you can see grass, you know, dead grass leaves or branches.
Blades.
They're all hanging over. They're already blowing over all into other neighbors' yards and making a mess in their yard. So I thought, you know what? Let's talk about right from the beginning. Tell people, get them trimmed.
Bob, man, you're going to scare some people off with your approach.
I know.
It's bugging Bob.
I know.
You know, that doesn't bother me.
Well, and I'm not saying, you know, in some aspects I think it's fine. But you know what? I know you like to take care of your yard, and you don't want to see all the blades laying all over your yard making a mess.
They blow up the street. They're someone else's mess.
There you go.
Yeah,
so
you know,
give them to somebody else.
But, hey, it won't matter.
It does.
This time next year.
No. And you don't have to get out and do it. I'm kind of giving people a hard time. So let's be perfectly clear. It doesn't have to be done until March, till the new stuff starts coming
right.
up.
Right.
So if you don't get to it and you want to leave it for the birds or you want to leave it for, you know, just for the look, it's fine. Go ahead and do it.
Speaking of, guess what I found when I was cutting back my ornamental grasses? This is a first for me. I found a couple of blades that had praying mantis egg casings.
Really? In the grass?
In the grass. Yeah. I should have taken a photo of that.
So you left those, I assume.
What I did, I took those and put them over on the side of the house and put them, kind of tucked them into my boxwoods.
So they could be nice and warm for the winter, have a little place to kind of sit there, and then hatch in the spring.
Those guys will hatch next spring. Yeah.
And then they'll
just like the photos that I had placed on our Facebook page, you know, of the praying mantis egg casings that I typically, more than likely, you'll find them in your pine trees.
Yes.
You know, but you'll find them in a lot of other things too. So it's not just pine trees. But that kind of caught me off guard, and I was surprised.
Yeah, you usually don't see them on the blades or anything like that in the grass.
Not at all. So, do you have any New Year's gardening resolutions for 2019?
No, I don't do a lot of resolutions. That's not my thing. You know, it's just I know some people do. You know, I know Amanda was talking about how her weight loss program started as a resolution. So I think they're really good. It's just, you know, I'm always a goal setter. So I'm always setting, hey, I want to try to accomplish, like, even working in the yard. And this year, my son graduates high school. So my wife has already told me, we have to have the house ready. We have to have the house ready. So I guess that's my New Year's resolution goal, is to have the house ready for everybody to come to our house for a graduation party. So I'll actually get the mulch down. Mm-hmm. The flowers will be good. I'm hoping sometime in February to kind of really start edging my beds, getting things cleaned up, if everything goes well. But the listeners know how I work.
Just a little bit of
time.
I'm
a little late.
Bob, you know, if you just work an hour or two in the yard a week or every couple of days, before you know it, you'll have all of your chores and everything taken care of, and you don't have to do it all at once.
You know, and that's something I know we're going to talk about all year on the maintenance and keeping it low maintenance. And, you know, and we're going to encourage people not to just say, okay, on June 1st, I'm going to trim everything and edge my beds and mulch, and that's all I'm doing. You know, I assume this is how you are, but I like to encourage people, it's okay to dabble a little bit here and there, and it's not as much work when you work an hour or two and then you're done.
Right.
You know, and you come back next week, maybe throw an hour or two in and you're done.
You know, it's like what I'll find myself doing a lot of times is I don't try and do everything at once. You know, there might be an afternoon on a Sunday when, you know, we close down the garden center, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is a good day. You know, I'll prune on the boxwoods.
Yeah.
And then maybe next Sunday, you know, it might be another nice day, and I might say, you know what, I'm going to fertilize them.
Right.
You know, or I'm going to put the systemic drench on them to protect them from psyllids and the leaf miner. So, you know, I don't try and do it all at once, and then I don't feel overwhelmed. And I think a lot of times as gardeners, that happens to us. But one of my New Year's resolutions when it comes to gardening, and this is, I'm bad at this.
Okay.
Is that I will bring home plant material, and it will sit in containers for a couple of weeks.
Oh, you find some at the garden center like, and you're like, ooh,
exactly.
I need to put this.
Right.
But then you don't do it.
Right. I will, but it's not right away. You know, I always, there's an element about me, it's like, you know, I'll get to that.
Yeah.
I know that I'll get to that. Now, oddly enough, I'm sitting on some Carl Forrester grasses that are still at my house, and I probably could, based on what the weather's been like, I could have planted those very easily.
Sure.
And I
haven't done it yet.
Nope. And I'm probably more than likely going to take them back down to the greenhouse and just let them winter over in a greenhouse. I don't know.
Throw them in. It's going to be 52 degrees today.
Yeah.
48 degrees tomorrow.
And it can change all of a sudden. Hold on to that thought. In and around the house with Tony Works. And again, if you're just getting up and joining us, welcome. And we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And a great way to stay in touch with us is via our Facebook page. And we recently posted some interesting things the last couple of days on our Facebook page. Check it out. Give us some of your take on it, some comments. And also, feel free to email us as well if you have any questions, in and around the house at b105.com. We'll definitely get back to you in a couple of days. And if you want to catch a podcast show from something in the past, Alex, our good friend over there on the other side of the board, does a great job keeping up with that. So you can certainly do it that way. And give us a call at 749-B105. And before we went into the break, we were talking about some New Year's resolutions, you know, when it comes to gardening and so forth. And one of mine, as I mentioned, sometimes I I have the habit of taking things home and just allowing them to sit around. I'll continue to water those, Bob, plants that I find in the greenhouse that I want to plant in my own yard and garden. And they'll sit around for a few weeks, and I just need to get better at getting them in the ground a lot sooner. And just this past year, you know, I've been working on the progress, you know, the things behind the house. It's work in progress with our landscape, and I have some grasses still sitting around that I need to take back down to the greenhouse. And I'm a little on the fence about, you know, I know the weather's been good, and I probably have, you know, could have gotten away with it, but you never know, so I'm not going to risk it. You probably would, and that's okay.
Well, you and I, this is where you and I are a little different because of our businesses. You know, we're a little more on the landscape side, so we're doing a lot of work. But when it comes to ornamental grasses, you have to specifically know which variety you're planting this time of year, because if you're planting something that is a zone 6, which we are, I would not necessarily recommend that. I'm looking at the Weather Channel and the forecast for supposedly the next 10 days or whatever. You know, but you're in Cincinnati. We don't know. The weather could be 52 today, and it could be 20 in a matter of a couple days or even overnight. And if all of a sudden we get one of these big cold snaps or that polar vortex comes down and nails us,
right,
you could have some trouble with things that are touchy.
Well, when things don't get rooted in, that's where the real issue is. And I worry more about heaving. As that ground starts working itself, you know, with those cold temperatures, you know, as those temperatures with the ground start to fluctuate, you know, when things don't get rooted in, and obviously they're not going to be that well rooted in,
right,
because they're really not that active, you know, it's that element of heaving, and that's where you get into trouble. Then all of a sudden it's like, these guys just didn't make it.
Right.
You know, and like you said, some of those grasses are a lot more temperamental and more so than others, and check the zones. And, you know, we were just talking in the break where, you know, you were telling me about a variety I'm not that familiar with, is Piglet, which is a Pennisetum.
It is a Pennisetum.
And it's a lot more, apparently it looks like it's hardier than Hamlin, which has been really disappointing for me, because I've planted Hamlins in the past that might give me two or three seasons, which is an ornamental grass. Hamlin is a Pennisetum.
Known as dwarf fountain grass.
Dwarf fountain grass, very attractive, and gets that nice little cattail plume. And there were some winters that it was its demise.
I'll be quite honest with everybody. It's disappointing how many plants had to be replaced over the winter with that particular variety of Pennisetum. It's just really, I had a lot more issues than I would like. I mean, honestly, all of us want almost 100%. You know, that's great. If you can even get close 95 to 100% with your plantings, you've done really well. Because we know we have clay, we have wet conditions, we have dry conditions.
Right.
Everything can change. But if you use plants that can adapt to that, and the Hamlin specifically, and I grew it, I had a lot more issues with it than I would like. So we switched to this Piglet that's supposed to be one zone hardier, meaning it can handle a little bit more cold temperatures.
Right.
That should make a pretty big difference.
Now, you know what I like about Piglet, what I've read, I'm not that familiar with it, is that it will tolerate some wet soils.
That's important.
So even right now at this moment where we are with a lot of ground moisture, typically that could be the kiss of death for a lot of plants.
Especially for ornamental grasses.
Yes.
Some of those specifically cannot handle the wet.
Right.
And there are varieties that can.
Right. So that's
now the one you have, though, Carl Forrester, I love that grass. That's that real vertical grass. It gets the plume late almost midsummer.
It's earlier.
It's early, so it really shows the plume, but it's very vertical, doesn't spread very fast.
It's structured. It's in attention. It's at attention.
Exactly.
Yes.
That would be perfect. So imagine somebody standing at attention, you know, nice and straight and strong. That's what that plume is.
And that's Private Carl Forrester. Yes. Reporting to duty, sir. Yes, absolutely.
But that's a good plant. Now, I would think, because I believe that's a zone 4 or 5 as well, I'd probably say you could probably get away with planting that one.
Perhaps. Now, but, you know, I'm not quite sure how I want that to lay out. So that's why I'm not adamant about getting it into the ground.
Sure.
And here's that other element about me that I'm like, you know, I know I can just take it down to the greenhouse and I can very easily winter it over and
right,
it will be fine and I can get back to it next year.
Right. And does Tina ever get on you about not getting stuff planted?
No, I think this is one thing that we have in common sometimes, because she'll do that with annuals.
Oh, she will. She'll bring them home and then not use them?
Yeah.
Or not get them in?
Well, she'll get them in, but it's just amount of, it all depends.
It all depends.
You know, and that's going back to what we do for a living. Boy, there's just days that when you get home, you're done.
That's
you're cooked.
True.
You know, and think about it. When you're in a greenhouse and it's rather warm, you know, it's pushing 90s in the greenhouse and you're outside and you've been beaten by the sun all day. Not that I don't appreciate that. But when you go home, I want to get a little bit of air.
Yeah. You're okay? Pretty tired.
Well, like
today. Today's going to be a great day in the greenhouse because it's going to be sunny.
Oh, it's perfect.
So you may actually have to pop the tops and let a little heat out.
This is when I will turn the heat down, the furnaces, and I'll open the vents sometimes. It's perfect.
Yeah, just because I know that we'll probably get up. Our greenhouse will probably pop up into the 80s, and we'll have to open things up if it gets any hotter than that.
And, you know, and if you have things in the greenhouse, which you do undercover.
Right, we do.
You know, you have to really be careful that you don't want those to start pushing.
Right.
And that's a fine line to walk in our world.
It is. It is. So and going back real quick to that Carl Forrester or the feather reed grass, it actually is the coldest zone is 3 to 9.
Well, that's even better. So there,
I could probably get away with it. I would feel completely confident planting that plant.
As long as I plant it and firm it up and make sure that it's secured in the soil around it. And when I say that, you know, just not doing it haphazardly or letting part of the crown remain above the soil surface.
Right.
Definitely it's going to heave up and that crown will freeze out. That's what you don't want.
And when we talk about heaving, we're talking about when the ground freezes, it'll push some of those plants up. And that's when you can get into some issues. So make sure you plant that properly. And be in that zone, I would go ahead and do it. So, you know, I know you're not going to because I know how you are. And you make fun of me with my Christmas lights. By the way, I got them down. So at least the ones I could reach.
Good. Good. You should. You know, it's only, you know, it's a Kentucky thing what you did.
Well, I tried to get more down this year, kind of take them out of my blue spruce. I snapped the lines.
I'm going
to lose some.
Well, we're talking about taking down Christmas decorations. We got to take another quick break.
Yep.
749-B105, Tony Works, in and around the house. And when we come back, we're going to tell you a couple things you might be able to do with your cut Christmas tree that just don't take it to the curb. There's some things you can do, and we'll tell you what those things are when we come back. Back to In and Around the House
Alex
with Tony Works.
Alex is bringing it today.
I like it.
Yeah. Love the music.
We're going to turn up the temperature a little bit today. 50 and sunny. Get out and do something. Enjoy it. And
Get outside, get fresh air, take a walk, anything.
It gets me stoked for the spring season, that's for sure. And
I know it's early.
While you went out to the cantina, we just received a call from Chris. Chris, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. What can we help you with?
Well, I live down in Kentucky, about an hour south of Cincinnati there. And just wanted to see, I mean, you know, with our unpredictable weather around here, what would be the best, you know, grass seed to, say, put down right now?
Are you speaking of grass seed?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I would postpone that a little bit. And I'm going to tell you what seed I would recommend, too, in just a moment. But I would postpone it until we kind of get past a little bit of this this wetness we've been experiencing. Because what ultimately can end up happening, you know, if you were to sow grass seed today, you know, the ground's rather damp and moist. There's a lot of moisture in the soil. A lot of times, you know, you're taking a risk of some of that seed kind of staying too wet for a prolonged period of time. And ultimately what ends up happening is that some of that seed, you lose it. It kind of decays. It rots. So
right.
I like to push it back to like mid-February, latter part of February, where the ground is really, by that time, I'm pretty certain and confident that it will be a lot cooler than what we have been. And with the fluctuations of the ground temperatures changing, with the daytime temperatures warming up, the nighttime temperatures getting cooler, the ground kind of honeycombs open, and you can, when you sow grass seed, it kind of pulls it in and protects it. And I would put it off a little bit, but the seed that I prefer, that I really like, and that's one, it's been around for a while, and it's changed over the past couple of years, and it's Fine Lawn Elite, which now you will find it under the name Fine Lawn H2O. It's a it's an excellent tall fescue, and when we say tall fescues, that doesn't mean it grows tall. You know, it's just tall fescues do really well in our area because it's a cool season type of grass, type of turf, and those do best, you know, that's best suited for our area. I know that Bob, chime in, Bob. I know Bob has his own mix, And that is one that I would highly suggest that you use. I also like ExecuTurf. So, but my go-to is Fine Lawn H2O.
Yeah, and if you do any good quality turf fescue grass seed, and you do it about the middle of February, you should be in really, really good shape. And being an hour south of us, you'll warm up just a little bit faster than we will. It may be only a couple degrees here, a couple degrees there, but your grass seed about the middle of February would probably be a perfect time to sow that. And I think you'd have great success coming up early in March if it warms up. If it's a cold March, it'll just sit there, and you'll get plenty of germination later in the month. But, you know, it all depends on temperatures. But about if you do it, Tony's right, if you do it now and it stays this wet, some of that seed might rot, and then you'll lose the germination, and then you won't get anything coming up. So I wait another probably 6 weeks before I did anything, and then you'd be in great shape.
Okay. Now, I mean, like, I have, you know, several bare spots. You know, would I, you know, would it be smart to put some straw down to, you know, kind of keep, like, a little blanket over it, or just sew it in and, you know, let it go like that?
You could, but I would, you know, if they're smaller spots, I really wouldn't.
What size are those spots? Are we talking about something that's 2x2, or are we talking about something 10x10?
There's several different sizes. I, you know, I had a couple dogs, and they kind of tore some stuff up. So.
Gotcha. If they're little spots, I wouldn't worry about putting anything down. But if you've got something that's, you know, 5x5, it might be nice to have a little bit of straw or something down. And if you have the dogs now and you need to kind of feel like you need to do it, you could go ahead and throw the straw down just to keep the mud off the dogs. You'll have to rake that back, throw your grass seed, and then kind of put it back on top.
Right.
So if you have dogs now and you want to try to keep them from being too muddy, go ahead and throw some straw down. It'll sit there for about 6 weeks. Rake the straw back real fast, throw your grass seed down, and then kind of rake the straw back over top. And you should be in really good shape for getting some grass to grow in the spring.
And, Chris, one other tip on the straw. Do it at about a 50% coverage ratio. You know, do it to where you can still see some soil surface and even some of the seed that you have, you know, you have sown. And because that will allow for earlier warm up for the soil surface. You know, if you layer it rather heavily, you know, heavy with the straw, the soil surface will stay damp longer and cooler longer. So just, you know, allow some light to get to it, and, you know, some air. And like Bob said, you know, it's a perfect time to do it. All right.
Any starter first with it, or just?
Just the smaller spots, I really wouldn't do it. It's not necessary. You can. You know, if you use a starter fertilizer, one that I prefer that you go and look for is Fertilume's Seed Starter.
Okay.
I like the analysis on it. So it's low in nitrogen, and it has a higher element or of phosphorus, middle number, which is essential for new turf to get off on a good start.
I probably wouldn't fertilize small spots either with Tony. I agree 100%. But I would look at that new lawn starter by Fertilome, and you can actually use that on the whole lawn for like a early spring application if you wanted to, and feed the whole lawn with it. But you're not going to do that till March. I wouldn't worry about it till then.
Right. Okay.
All right, Chris. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Let us know how it goes. All right. Sounds great. You know, that's a great question, too, about winter seeding, which we also call or term as dormant seeding.
Right.
And, you know, February is the next best time to sow grass seed, and that's exactly what we call it, dormant seeding. And this is my take on it, Bob, is that all the planets have to be in alignment for that to really work well. And when they are, by gosh, it's one of the you'll get some of the best results.
Yes, if everything goes well. But, you know, I think a lot of times the dormant seeding, people just take it, throw it on top of the grass that's there, and just hope. And there still has to be some contact. I feel like there's got to be some surface to see contact. So if you just throw it on top of grass thick, it's not going to get down in, and it's just going to sit there and rot.
A lot of people do that. What happens is the seed never makes its way to the soil surface.
Right.
And you, like you said, soil to seed contact is the key element for germination. And a lot of times, if you have a nice, healthy lawn that's thick, you don't need to overseed.
Correct.
I don't think that you do. That's my take on it.
Sounds like Chris has bare spots because he has animals, and, you know, that happens. So you probably do have to throw some grass seed down. You know, he's right. He's just a little early. But there's a lot of people who come and they'll winter seed, like, oh, I got to get my winter seed down. If your lawn's thick, you don't have to have it. It's okay. Right. Not put it down.
You know, and you just brought up another thing that we don't talk too much about sometimes, other than when we get a caller about it. You know, when you have pets and, you know, the urine really creates some problems.
Well, it changes with the complexity of the soil. It
changes that whole pH level. And it becomes so acidic and it burns it that a lot of times people have a very difficult time getting grass established in those areas. And what happens? If you have a couple of dogs, repeatedly, they're going back. They're trying to trump one another with their scent on that spot. And it just, it compounds the whole problem. And it's a very difficult one to, you know, fix, in my opinion.
It is very difficult. A lot of homeowners struggle with it. Now, as we get rains and it kind of works some of that through the soil, you know, the pH will start to kind of balance back up naturally.
Right.
But that's a long process, and most people don't want to wait that long.
Nope, that it is. Great question there. And, again, what we're going to have to do, we'll get back to what you can do with your cut tree after we take this next break. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And Bob Bards in the studio with me this morning, helping me along with the show. And covering some ground already, and again, a great way to stay in touch with us is via our Facebook page, and you can also certainly email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com, or give us a call, 749-B105, and if you want to catch a past show, Alex definitely does a great job keeping up with that with our podcast. You can certainly do that and get to that via our webpage, and we have a buddy of yours, Steve, on the line.
Steve, good morning, Steve. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, Bob. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's good to hear from you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, first of all, Happy New Year to you and your family.
Yeah, how's everybody doing out at your place?
Well, they're doing well. I just want to call. You're getting a little cocky this morning on calling these people out on this ornamental grass.
So, you know I was talking about you, right?
I wanted to give you a call and get on schedule for today since it's going to be 50 degrees if your team leader's not going to be out on the boat or anything.
You know what? It's 52. He might be out on the boat. You never know, except for the river's up right now.
Yeah. Can I get on schedule for today? And I can just get this fixed right now.
I will.
Be on me. And
Dougie will be up probably around 7. He'll hit the gym. So I'll make sure that I give him a text and let him know you called and try to get him over there first thing for you.
Problem solved, sir.
Hey, Steve, does a Bob get on the muscle a lot? Is that something pretty common? You noticed it already early this morning.
What's that?
Well, that Bob's on. You're on the muscle about ornamental grasses and cutting them back.
Yeah, Steve comes in all style. Steve's a great. I love Steve and his wife. They're awesome. They come in. He gives me a hard time all the time, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So
that's the beauty of developing relationships with customers.
Hey, I thought you were going to get out there and cut those grasses, though.
Well, I've got some things I need to do today.
Wow. Okay.
I've got motorcycles that need ridden. Four wheelers. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I figured you'd be out today on a great day like this. And, you know, you're like me. Some of those ornamental grasses can wait a few days for a nice day like this.
If you could help me out and get that done today, then, man, Kathy will love you.
Well, I'll see what I can do, buddy.
Hey, we'll see you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Steve.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
See ya.
Bye.
That's funny. Hey, he called you out.
He does. I tell you what, he comes to the store and gives me a hard time. I wouldn't have it any other way. I give it to him, too.
That's right. And, you know, that's what's really interesting and the beauty of having your own business and, you know, local businesses. You can develop those kind of relationships with your customers and people in the community. So,
well, Steve's a great guy. And everybody, anybody listening that knows Steve heard his voice. He has that voice. And, you know, he's been around with Harley Davidson's for a while.
He's going riding, and you're going cutting.
He'll go riding. So I'll have to call Doug to see if the cutting's going to happen. It probably won't today.
Ooh, he doesn't want to hear that.
I didn't want to tell him.
He's going to call back.
He's going to call back and give me a hard time.
But anyway, before we went into the break, we're talking about what can we do with our cut trees. And there's a lot of things we can do with our cut trees. Don't just take them to the curb. You know, check with your local municipality. See if there's a scheduled pickup date for those where they'll take them to various locations, or you can take them to a certain location and shred your tree.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of people will shred it and make mulch and then put it around some of the parks and things like that.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of beneficial things that we can do with our cut Christmas trees, and you know, that's one of them. What else that you can do, what I like to do, is I will take the decorations off of our tree, and I will take the tree down into the yard and tie it to one of the other deciduous trees near my bird feeders, and it sits right up next to that tree, and the birds will roost in it.
Yeah, they get a little protection.
Especially
the little guys from the big predators this time of year.
That's right.
Because they're a lot easier to, it's a lot easier to see them this year, this time of year, because there's not leaves for them to hide and disguise themselves and not as many evergreens. So that gives them a place, because there's usually those branches are pretty tight, so those little guys can get back in there and be protected.
And if it turns cold, you know, they can get out of the cold, and like you said, they're protected from other predators. So that's one. That's another thing you can do with your tree.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that I used to do a lot is an easy way to dispose of the tree and take it out of the house without getting all the needles all over, is that I would take my pruning shears, and I would just start individually cutting the branches and putting them in a box. And then I would take those branches out and just lay those boughs over my perennial beds, over my hostas, and it would protect them during the winter.
I like how you just nice and you're pruning them. You're really nice and methodical and just take your time. Now, I'd take a chainsaw and just zip that baby up and down, and, man, that thing would be done in about 3 minutes.
Nope.
I'm impressed with you.
That's what I would do. I did learn my lesson. Yeah. I have to tell you a story, and this is a true story. Long, long, long ago, I took one of our Christmas trees. Well, sometimes we would put up two. I took it outside, and, you know, my deck sits up about 10 feet off the ground, and it kind of looks like my fire pit. You can almost
chuck it.
So I thought I was going to be really cool and quick and clever and chuck it. And as I threw that tree or tried to propel it outward, it just kind of looked like it stopped in midair, and it fell on one of my hawthorns, and it damaged it. And I was like, you idiot. It just, the tree was never the same. It was one of the most bonehead things I had ever done. And I just couldn't live with myself for a while. I was just like,
broke your tree. Yeah, that's a pretty good throw. If you could throw it from your deck. See, that's the problem. When you're up that high and you're looking down, it looks like it's just right there.
It's deceiving.
It's 30 feet back. You're not going to throw a tree 30 feet.
No.
Well, nobody accused you of being the sharpest tool in the shed.
No, but that's a true story. So don't do that. You know, and, you know, again, you know, shred your tree up, cut it up. You know, do you ever use the tree bags? Well, you have an artificial tree.
But I have used the tree bags because I used to have a cut tree. And I would put the tree bag in and then... remember, I had the blue spruce, which if you've ever had a blue spruce for a cut Christmas tree, they drop needles quick. You know, it's not like the firs that hold it for a while or even a pine or something along those lines. They drop really fast. So, yes, I would wrap a bag to carry it out of the house.
You know, and also a lot of people like to take Christmas trees and put them in their ponds or lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And
for the fish.
Yeah, for the fish. And, you know, they like to spawn around those trees, you know, provides protection for the smaller fish. So there's a number of things that are beneficial with your cut tree that you can do after the end of the season. So don't just take it right to the curb.
And throw it in the landfill.
No, throw it in the landfill. Right. Think about it and make use of it and allow it to go back into Mother Earth.
There you go. We're recycling without sending it to Cohen, which Cohen doesn't need trees. They don't do trees. So you have to recycle it your way.
And we got to take another quick break. We're going to continue talking gardening when we come back out of the break. 749-B105, if you have any questions or something you might be interested in doing this upcoming spring season, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you're just joining us, good morning. And Bob Bard, again, my good friend from Bard's Nursery, is joining in with us here live in the studio. And we've been covering a lot of ground. And you know, Bob, I wanted to bring something up that I found very interesting the other day. I took off Monday, and then I stopped down at the public library in Covington. And when I was down there on 4th Street, I pulled over and had to take a photograph of a living wall that's on a building. I think it's called the Boone Block Building, right there on the corner of Russell and 4th Street in Covington. And you can see this really some cool artwork that's on the side of this old brick building, which is now it's been renovated into some condominiums. And underneath the artwork is a living wall. And I posted that on our Facebook page. And I find this kind of planting and so forth very unique and interesting.
Because
in Europe, living walls are big.
Mm-hmm.
And you're starting to see some of that. When I was up in New York City, I saw various buildings that had some really neat living wall kind of scapes on it.
Right.
And there's so many things that you can do. Now, this one caught my attention because there's a number of different shrubs and various evergreens and ornamental grasses in here, since we're talking about ornamental grasses. And this was just recently planted up this past year, late summer, early fall. And I found this to be really interesting. And I'm going to follow this because the first thing that popped into my mind is these are sizable plants. How well will they hold up, especially going through a winter?
Well, winter or even a dry summer. Spell.
And my other question is, how do they get watered?
And trimmed. It's a really cool picture. If you haven't gone to the Facebook page, you got to sometime when you have a second. If you're driving, obviously don't do it. But it really is worthwhile going to the In and Around the House Facebook page and check out these pictures, because it really is pretty cool to think that has been created. It's something you can drive up, park right in front of, and take a look at. But there are some really cool plants. It looks like there's some gray owl juniper. Looks like there's some sea green juniper. Some can't tell which kind of ornamental grasses, but it looks like a miscanthus based on the plumes. The plumes that are showing there. Looks like some Gold Coast juniper possibly, but definitely a gold juniper. You know, and there's a lot of different plants in there.
And there's even some deciduous shrubs in there that have lost their foliage along with those evergreens.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I don't know if that's Rheingold arborvitae or if that is, what's the other one I planted down in my backyard? I'm forgetting what I, it's that other arborvitae, Fire Chief. Thank you. That's what I was trying to think of too. It could be a grouping of fire chiefs right there.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I like it. It's different. It's something you don't commonly see. And only time will tell how well that holds up, but it's artwork in itself. It's not in the ground. It's just in pockets.
It's vertically. So those who haven't been able to look at the Facebook page, it's planted vertically. It's not planted on the ground.
Now, did you see where the pockets almost, and they're sizable pockets that the root ball has been planted in,
mm-hmm.
and it's almost like a wool felt kind of product.
Right. So they're kind of planted. They're planted almost like they're supposed to be, but in pockets.
Right.
But it goes up a wall vertically.
And the pockets look like they would hold something around a 3-gallon size pot,
mm-hmm.
or a root ball structure. Maybe 2-gallon or 3-gallon. I'm not really sure. I didn't get up close and measure it. But very, very interesting. And if you get an opportunity, stop down at Molly Malone's. And when you leave Molly Malone's, walk over in that direction, and you'll get to see this wonderful artwork.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And you know what's really neat when you step back and look? Somebody really thought it out on how to put some different colors into that design, which is something that we talk about on this show all the time. When you're planting, having variety and different shades and different textures really makes it interesting. And this specifically, somebody's done a good job adding the different colors and adding the different textures. And it really looks really kind of cool. So if you get a chance, go run down there and check that out.
You know, I was trying to remember who the artist was that did that painting. I want to say, I don't know if you've heard of it, the London Police.
I have not heard of it.
Yeah, so I had to look that up. I had asked someone the other day if they knew who the artist was. But it's whimsical to say the least, but the living wall element of it underneath the artwork is really cool as well. So
it is.
Check it out on our Facebook page. Let us know what you think. You're starting to see a lot more of this kind of stuff. You know, going vertical is, it's kind of a trendy thing, and a lot of people do it indoors too with various succulent plants and house plants. They have vertical plantings inside on the walls.
Sure.
So, and you can even do it outdoors as well.
There's planters, annual planters that you can buy, you know, that kind of you just hang on the wall and they're planted and they almost look like living walls. There are many versions of it,
mm-hmm.
but you could definitely have some fun with that. And that's where you could get creative. And, you know, if you have a large wall in the backyard and you want to add some interest, there are ways of doing it. You just got to kind of think outside the box.
Just a little bit. Just think outside the box. But I like it. So that really creates an element of green space, but just taking it in a vertical kind of style. So since, you know, most of that's concrete down there below it, so where can you plant? You can't plant in concrete, so that's a great alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I thought it was really interesting. Check it out. Tell us what you think, and maybe we can elaborate that on more of that in future shows.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also goes back into, for, you know, years ago, the green roofs were really kind of getting popular. And we're putting vegetation on top of houses or on top of buildings.
Yeah, rooftop gardens, mm-hmm. too, are becoming a thing. There's a, I can't remember the hotel downtown. Is it called the Millennial?
Mm-hmm.
It's right there downtown. Is it Millennium? Mm-hmm. One of them has a really nice rooftop garden.
Do
really
they?
Cool, yeah. And you're seeing a lot of that, too. And if you ever come down through the Cut in the Hill, the new Saney Hospital is right there off the side of 75. You can see where that rooftop was planted.
Yep.
And that really saves a lot on utility bills. It's a unique approach. And really, in the city of Chicago, that's really big, too, the rooftop gardens in New York. So why not bring it here to the Queen City?
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's done properly and, you know, you use the right plants, you do your research.
I don't know that much about how they really do those rooftop gardens, to be honest with you. I know that Kruger Maddox over in Sunman, Indiana, used to grow those. They were special trays.
Specifically for rooftops.
Specifically for rooftops. And I think they kind of interlocked and they could just plant those, you know, set them up on top of those rooftops. And then, you know, there's even some of those situations when we're talking about sustainability, you know, when they get watered. There are collection systems that capture that water and they reuse that water when, in fact, they have to be watered.
Yeah, it takes some creativity and takes some thought, but you know, that just what you put on Facebook was a neat picture, and you know, just shows the signs of what you can do. You can accomplish a lot with plants and landscaping, and really add some interest. And that wall art definitely did.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about vertical gardening as well too, you can do that with trellises and various things as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, topiaries. You know, that's a form of vertical gardening.
Absolutely,
and it adds a lot of pizzazz to the garden and so forth. And you know, I think it's something interesting that is definitely worth considering. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, that's when we start getting into creativity. And you know, if let's say you have a trellis along a wall and then maybe you add some plants in front of it and then even a few perennials in front of that, then you have all this layers in a small landscape area where you can still create something incredibly interesting, you know, and have different shades of colors and different times of flowers all in one little area. And the trellis might be something that helps you accomplish that.
Right. And then there was someone on our Facebook page kind of chuckled and said, who gets to water all that stuff?
Not me.
So there's probably some sort of a built-in watering automated mechanism that's set up there to certainly take care of that. That would be difficult to do, and stretching out with a hose of some sort.
Well, if I knew a little bit more how it was done, but if I'm assuming, and sometimes you shouldn't do that, but, you know, with these pockets, this is probably like a big blanket with all these pockets that are in there. And it's probably really, really heavy fabric. I mean, you were up closer to me.
It would have to be, and it would have to be secured to the wall in such a way it could hold those sizable root balls.
Right, and that much weight, because when you do get something wet and the soil wet, it would definitely, you know, it's going to be heavy.
Yeah, check it out when you get a chance, and give us your thoughts, give us your 2 cents, and tell us what you think. And it could be a potential another topic for another show. And we got to take another quick break, unfortunately, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the perennial plant of the year for 2019. Give us a call, 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and we're covering a lot of ground this morning, that's for sure. And I'm stoked because today, high of 50 and nothing but sunshine, Bob.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. It doesn't get any better than that, especially this time of year, and I will take it.
You know, for sure. I'm one of those guys that looks out at the, like, 10 and 15-day forecast because I want to see where things are going, just to see what the trend's going to be. And you know how I'm kind of a weather nerd anyways. But, you know, when you look out in the 10-day forecast, according to the Weather Channel, you know, we're going to stay near 40s. There's a couple days in there in the 30s, but a lot of temperatures in the 40s all the way out. For 10 more days.
Do you find that favorable for plants and various things as we progress through the winter months? Or do you think that can be a detriment?
You know, if it's too warm and we don't get cold, I think that does have something to do with killing some of the bugs and different things mm-hmm. like that. You know, but Mother Nature's done this before. A couple of years ago, we were really cold this time of year.
Right.
And, you know, and last year we went up and down. It was the roller coaster year where we were up and down, up and down, up and down, and then cold into spring. You know, so plants adapt.
I think for the most part they do. I think if anything's favorable about a winter like what we're experiencing thus far are some of the more temperamental type of things, you know, and I'm talking about maybe lavender. But lavender doesn't like the moisture.
Crape myrtles.
Crape myrtles, yes.
You know, southern magnolias.
Southern magnolias.
Some of those things that are a little touchy that maybe you planted this
butterfly
year.
Butterfly bushes, buddleia.
This helps.
So this helps. And, you know, but on the flip side, with a lot of the moisture, you know, I was telling you that the temperatures are favorable for things like, you know, lavender and so forth, but not the moisture in the ground.
Right.
You You know, the moisture in the ground really wreaks havoc with a lot of sun-loving perennials. You know, lavender is one of those. Rudbeckia is another one. Black-eyed Susans. You know, those guys, you know, the echinaceas, they don't like to sit in moisture throughout the winter months. All of a sudden, the crown just it decays. It rots out. So there's things that aren't favorable with this type of weather pattern, and it's favorable for others.
It's favorable for me to get some landscape work done. I can tell you right now, we're having to put some plywood down to protect people's lawns, so we're not tearing everything up. But I'll take it. You know, if this is what we're gonna get, I'm fine with dropping down into the 20s. You know, during the night, coming back up near 40, I'm good with that.
Yeah, then a lot of people will say and think, well, you know, we'll have a lot more insect activity next year. You know, insect activity is not a bad thing. You know, we've been killing off a lot of beneficial insects. So if this helps them in such a way, more power to them.
I'm not an expert on bees by any means whatsoever, but I would think
it's favorable for the bees.
I would think so, but no, I don't know. Right. But, you know, I would think this would help.
That's interesting.
And anytime we can help the bees, I'm all for it.
Most definitely. Before we went into the break, we were going to talk about and bring up, and we are, the perennial plant for 2019, and that is one called Stachys humelo, H-U-M-M-E-L-O. And when I think of Stachys, and when you think of Stachys, what do you think about? Lamb's ear.
First thing I thought of was lamb's ear, and it looks a lot like the lamb's ear, and the lamb's ear is that kind of whitish-gray, feathery, with a big, tall purple flower, and the bumblebees love it. I mean, this is definitely a bee-friendly plant.
This one is definitely a bee-friendly plant as well. It's a little different than its cousin. You know, it doesn't have that textured foliage, that silvery kind of hairy foliage.
No, it's green.
It's green. It's not as aggressive as Stachys can be, lamb's ear in the garden. Lamb's ear can be a bully sometimes. It can just start spreading.
It's a quick spreader.
It can take over. Mm-hmm. This is not as aggressive. So that's a plus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, usually when a plant is tagged as being the perennial plant of the year by the Perennial Plant Association, there are some strict criteria that plant has to meet in order for them to say, hey, this is the plant we're going to bring you for the year, and naming it the perennial plant of the year.
Absolutely. And this one, what I love specifically about this one is if you really look at it, it can grow in full sun to part shade. So it can cover quite a bit of area in the lawn, or in the landscape. It does have a beautiful magenta color flower that is on, kind of has a stem, and then it's on top of the foliage.
It's on top of the foliage. It rises up above the foliage about 4 to 6 inches with those nice spiky blooms.
Yes, it does spread. It's considered a slow spreader, like you said earlier. So it is gonna creep a little bit, but it is manageable from the description. I have never used this one personally, this particular variety.
And something else that you brought up too, from a growing standpoint, it has to go through a vernalization period, a cool period, when we say that, in order for it to bloom the following season, or you will not see blooms. So if you happen to pick it up at your local garden center in the spring and you don't see it bloom, don't fret that. It's probably because it was planted this spring and it didn't get the chance to go through that cooling period, that vernalization. So don't let that, you know, deter you or get you down. You know, it's all based upon if it goes through that cooling period, then you'll definitely see it bloom this year.
Yeah. So anybody, like I have not grown this, and if I decide I want to and I plant it, it may not bloom for people this year. It won't bloom for people.
Unless a grower planted it this past fall.
Right.
But the beauty of it is too, full sun, the bloom time, July through September, so it gives you three solid strong months, and it's bee-friendly, and hey, what more can you ask for, you know, especially when we're trying to help our pollinators?
Absolutely.
So I think this is going to be a standout.
Well, also mention it's deer-resistant.
It's deer-resistant.
It also says it is tolerant to be planted near or under the black walnut. Sometimes that gets difficult.
It can.
So this one specifically, you might have some pretty good luck with it. And if it is as hardy as lamb's ear that we're used to, this one's a tough one. It's a tough perennial.
Yeah, and its winter hardiness is really spot on. So this was trialed up at the Chicago Botanical Gardens. So If things winter over in Chicago,
yeah,
you know it's going to be favorable in our situation down here.
And it gets a medium size to it. It is a zone. It goes all the way to zone four,
right,
which is nice. So that gets it. You know it's going to be cold hardy. But it's going to be about 1.5 to 2 feet tall. So it's going to have a little size. And that extra 2 feet is the top of the flower. So the foliage is probably, 12 to 14
yeah,
inches?
Yeah, it's more of a rosette kind of foliage. It's rather low. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, it's seed heads create winter interest, too, in a garden. So you don't feel compelled to clean it up.
Right.
I know you always say if it's brown, cut it down.
This is one of those where I might say don't, because it has some interest in the winter.
Right.
If you look at it, that little seed pod is very interesting.
Right.
And it's not going to blow over and make a mess as far as I know.
So. No, a very interesting plant. Look for it at your local garden centers and nurseries. And this is why it's important to stay local. Those of us who have independent garden centers and nurseries, we're looking for the newest and the best to bring it to you. And, you know, we're on top of it. And if you're really an avid gardener, or even if you're just a novice gardener and you're ready to get into perennials, you might want to look for this one this year at your local garden centers and nurseries. And, you know, keep it local, because on average, every dollar that you spend locally in the economy, 67 cents of that dollar stays local.
Yeah.
So very, very important. So help.
So you had mentioned just a little bit ago when we were talking about this that, you know, there's a strict criteria that the Perennial Plant Association goes through to pick perennials. So what are some of those things that...
You know, it's winter hardiness. I'm definitely looking for a winter hardiness, especially when it comes to a perennial.
Mm-hmm.
So that element definitely comes into, does it meet that criteria? It's hardiness.
Yep.
You know, also, you know, it's resistant to diseases and insect issues. You
right.
know, that's of the most utmost importance. How resistant is this to hot, humid situations like what we have here in the Cincinnati area?
Well, they want to know if it's easy to grow.
And if it's easy to grow, that's another one. And,
yep.
You know, all those things are factored in, and, you know, it's bloom period.
Right. Well, when you said that, I thought, you know what, I'm going to look it up, because I thought it'd be interesting to know exactly what they go through, because I always thought the same thing you just said, and you're right, everything's you're right, but they say, according to what they say, their criteria has 5 points that they look for. The first one is easy to grow. That is number one. Number two, iconic. Is it easily recognizable at a glance? Can you look at that particular plant and say, oh, I know what that is? You know, and we're maybe not talking about just the average person walking through, but they're talking about, you know, somebody that kind of, maybe a master gardener, and then they would be able to identify that. Is it readily available? That's always interesting. You know, is it readily available? Because, you know, we're talking about perennial of the year.
Right.
Not just for Ohio Valley area. Or the tri-state area.
Right.
So sometimes that one gets a little tricky, but I do understand why they put that one in there. Is it good in containers and baskets? You know?
That is not as important to me as it would be it being in the ground.
Right. And that's something they might do more of the annual of the year as it grows. You know, they might look into something like that.
Right.
And then is it an outstanding landscape performer? So those were five of the things that says, you know, making a champion that they put on one of their sheets.
Yeah,
so.
And I think, too, it having multiple seasons of interest,
mm-hmm.
That's something that needs to be taken into consideration with a plant. Not always do you get all seasons of interest with plants, but those that you can get a multiple amount of seasonal interest is even better.
Well,
and we were just talking about the seed head pods.
Right. That gives you some winter interest. But if you look, so July to September, you get a bloom. That's a pretty long bloom. That's a pretty good long
bloom. For a perennial,
bloom.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's got really pretty foliage. So even spring, summer, and fall, it's going to add, or in the spring without the bloom, it looks like it's got a nice foliage to it. It's got some texture, kind of layers over itself a little bit. So it really has a nice look to it there. Also, like you said, the seed pod. So this perennial gives you when it's up and around, it gives you a pretty good amount of time where it has some interest in the landscape. And I think that's what's interesting when they pick this particular plant. They did a pretty good job of picking something
interesting. They do. And you know, Bob, they'll pick not just one. They'll bring to the table, when they have these roundtable discussions, 3 or 4 or 5 plants.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm sure it probably gets heated, and you're arguing for your plant that you think should be the perennial plant of the year, and somebody else is arguing for theirs.
It's like the National Championship Committee trying to select the 4 teams for the BCS bowl, probably. They're fighting it out and screaming
fighting it out.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, everybody, you know, they're a little biased with various things. And that definitely comes into play with the perennial plan of the year.
Have you ever thought of what the old ones? You ever look back and say, what are some of the old ones?
Well, you know what? Where are they now? We'll talk about past perennial plants of the year. We have to take another quick break. But when we come back, where are the past perennial plants of the year? Are they still around? 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning, and we just got done covering the perennial plant of the year for 2019.
Are you calling us ground covers?
I did say ground cover, didn't I?
Yeah, you've said that twice. So I guess we're ground covers.
No, I said we've been covering a lot of ground.
Yeah, so we're ground covers.
We're ground covers. Thank you.
You're a Juga.
You know, which I do like a Juga.
I do.
And I like Burgundy Glow better than I do Bronze Beauty.
Me too.
And actually, it's on my shade perennial list.
Uh-oh. That's fine.
Which is another topic that we're going to talk about.
We are going to talk about shade
sometime
perennials.
Sometime this morning in the course of the show. And also wanted to, the Amelia Gardening Club's been texting or sending us messages on our Facebook page, Connie Compton. And Connie, thank you for getting with us with the Amelia Gardening Club. And we'll contact you folks. And we'll get together and perhaps do something, or all meet over at Bob's place and talk about some various perennials and so forth. So thanks for reaching out on Facebook to us. And before we went into the break, we were talking about, like I said, the perennial plant of the year for 2019, which is Stakey's Humulo. So we also ended that segment with, where are the past perennial plants of the year and prior years? And this was started back, the first perennial plant of the year was first coined or determined back in 1992. That's more than 16 years ago.
That's more than 16 years ago.
Where's my math? It's too early for me. But that's quite some time ago. And as we go through the list here, we'll talk about a couple of these. And we're going to try and incorporate a segment in our program on In and Around the House about various plants that were introduced maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or 4 years ago. Where are they today? You know, there are some plants that hang around and perform for many, many years and are staples in our garden centers and nurseries, and also staples in our landscapes. So, Bob, I'm going to let you kick it off. Pull up one.
Well, let's just go with the very first one, which was with, 27 years ago, 1992.
92.
So let's go with that.
And
that
I
is
like
one that is still used a lot today. So it's interesting to see how some of these have lasted and used and some aren't. But it was
Coreopsis
moonbeam. So
a great performer, and you'll still find it relatively readily available and easy to find in all local garden centers and nurseries.
Yeah, absolutely. So now it's funny. I look at some, we said that might be the first one, but according to what I'm looking at here, 1991 was the first one.
91? Well, did I miss?
I don't know. I have to say, I've thought it was
91.
91. Palace Purple Corabel, the Heuchera.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right.
It's actually 29 years ago because they count this year. So if you count this year, it's actually 29.
Palace Purple is still around.
Palace Purple. This is a good perennial. You know, it does well in a little bit of sun, not all day. Does well in some of the shady spots. Deep olive green to purplish colors. Really pretty. Got the little white flowers on it as well.
Palace Purple is a proven, it's a proven performer. It's attractive. It's been around a long time. So this is one of those things, where are they today? They're still at the garden center.
So what's good about this particular one is think about how this has expanded the whole Heuchera line. How many different plants have come out, because this one was perennial plant of the year in 1991. And look at how it's grown and really developed into a lot of different colors and types and textures. This is a really good one. So it's definitely, when they picked the first one, they picked a good one.
You know, and some of the Heucheras that we see today that are newer introductions are a little more temperamental, you know.
They are.
They don't always really winter over that well. So I always question the winter hardiness with various types of Heuchera. So, you know, this is definitely one that's a proven performer. Mm-hmm. It's been around a long time. And if you're a novice at perennial gardening, you know, this is one you want to, these are plants that we're talking about that you want to steer towards, that you'll find it rather easily done to take care of these perennials.
When it goes back to the criteria about what makes a good perennial plant of the year. When you look at the past winners, you can see why they were picked.
Right.
So I got two. You know, you told me to pick one. So it's your turn. Go ahead. Pick one you like.
In any particular year?
No,
Can I just pick one randomly?
Pick one randomly.
I have to say Nepeta.
Okay.
Catmint, Walker's Low.
That's a good one.
That was from 2007.
Yep.
And so many new varieties have been introduced since. And, you know, we have a new one coming out. It's rather new called Cat's Meow. That's a great plant.
If you have room, they can get pretty good size, and they do it quickly. So if you need color, like if you're going to have a fall party, you know, or not a fall, if you're going to have like a late summer party and you can plant some of this, it'll go from this little tiny plant to a big perennial rather quickly.
Right.
But it's a great performer. It's tough. It's durable. It has great color. It's deer resistant. I don't think you can go wrong. I love Nepeta, especially Walker's Low. That's the one they picked. It's a good, good perennial. I don't think you can go wrong with that.
Nope. And you'll find that rather easily at any of your local garden centers and nurseries.
Yep. Another one that I like, 2008, Geranium Roseanne.
Bingo.
Or Roseanne.
You know. I say Roseanne.
Yeah.
As long as it's not Roseanne Barr. I'm just kidding.
There you go.
But Roseanne, a great performer.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful plant. It mounds over.
Yeah. Low and mounding and a prolific bloomer. You'll love those blue blooms.
It blooms from late spring and almost into mid-fall. So it's a good bloomer. Some of the geraniums, that's another one where the geraniums have expanded. You'll get some pretty good fall color out of some of those foliages late in the fall where they get a little red or orange to it. So this is another one that I really like that, once again, when you look at past perennial of the year, they've picked some good ones that are still out there today.
Oh, this list is awesome. Mm-hmm. You need to check this list out. And you can easily do that, too. Go to the Perennial Plant Association's website, and you'll get all the dirt, all the lowdown on all of these plants. I'll tell you another one of my favorites. The year after the Geranium Roseanne,
mm-hmm.
it was Japanese forest grass,
yes.
Hakanakloa.
Say that fast three times.
Hakanakloa. It's hard to say.
It is.
I have this in my landscape, and it's next to my rock tread steps.
Mm-hmm.
And as it, you know, matures and gets older, the way that it just billows out, and it's got that golden look to it, areola, and it is a performer of all performers, and it will soften up any landscape, especially if you have a lot of hardscaping around.
And it does multiply, but it's not too fast. I've used this one quite a bit. It's a good plant. It's variegated in foliage where it's kind of got the yellow with the green on it. Really beautiful. Works great around water features. Works great around steps. Works great intermittent with just some evergreens to throw a nice contrast with it.
Well behaved. I will tell you this, you know, as we thinned out some trees and, you know, some of those were ash trees, when I got a little bit more sun, you know, it's on the east side of my house, so I got a little bit more sun in there to the Japanese forest grass.
Mm-hmm.
It really loved it. It received it well, and it even grew more, and it spread more. But it's not a bully in the garden. It's well behaved.
Not.
You know, it spreads, but it's a gentle spread.
All right, I got one for you. Trivia question. We'll see if you can get this one. So, I think there's only one. There might be two, but what is the ornamental grass that was picked to be perennial plant of the year?
Well, there were two.
There were two? Okay.
There were two.
All right, let's go 2014.
Northwind.
There you go.
Switchgrass, Panicum.
I knew you knew that one because we've already talked about this.
But the other one, well, we already talked about it too, and that was Carl Forrester.
Yes.
Private Forrester.
Right.
It's a reed grass. Beautiful, upright texture, well-behaved, and I'll tell you what, that particular grass looks stunning when you plant it in a mass planting. Hold on to that thought. We got to take another quick break. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. Bob Barge with me again from Barge Nursery. Always a pleasure to have Bob in here alongside me in the studio because we cover a lot of ground and talk about a lot of different plant varieties. And we're still going to talk about past perennial plants of the year. We'll be right back. I'm glad there isn't any ice out there now.
I agree. No ice maybe for us.
It's going to be. Today's temperatures will melt that ice.
Yep.
But welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And Bob Barb's in here with me again this morning. And we've been talking about a couple of different things. We're talking about the perennial plant of the year, which is going to be Stakey's Humulo for 2019, a must that you have to check out at your local garden centers and nurseries. amongst those that we've been talking about as well that were past winners. And we were just talking about a couple of the grasses and so forth. You know, Bob, you got to throw another one my way that you find that's where are they now from past winners? Perennial plant of the year.
All right. I got one for you.
Throw it my way.
One of my favorites, 2005, Linton Rose, the Helleborus.
There you go.
This is a great perennial. If you want something early in the spring, and we're talking about early, it's going to bloom almost in late winter. Well, it is going to bloom in late winter.
Mm-hmm.
Handles a ton of shade. Doesn't love a ton of sun. So it does need to be somewhat, it works really well in woodlands and underneath trees. It's perfect for like a more natural look of a garden. Great foliage with the flowers on top. It does have a pretty good root system, so it's very, very hardy, very cold tolerant. It does like a little moisture, too.
It does. You know, and there's another element about Helleborus, Linton Rose, that I really find interesting, and I like it. And it's the way that the blooms kind of, they nod downward.
Yes.
And it's almost as if you're walking past them in the garden and are nodding, like acknowledging you as you walk by.
How are you?
How you doing, Bob? Yeah. How you doing, Tony? So it's really, it's a wonderful plant. I agree with you. It's a must-have, especially if you have a shade garden.
Yes.
It can be. It will self-seed,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it can become a little aggressive sometimes in a garden.
If it finds the right spot.
Yeah, if it finds the right spot. But give it a little bit of room. But you said something that I totally agree with you is, you know, and put it in that naturalized area and give it some room, and it will be a great performer for you.
Well, with its root system, it will grow underneath some ornamental trees.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few that's fairly easy.
Right.
You know, if you put it underneath a birch, not a lot likes to grow just because the birch draws all the moisture up. So mm-hmm. if you water it, it'll be fine. But, you know, if you've got it underneath, I've seen it underneath some hawthorns. I've seen it underneath some crab apples. You know, you put it in those spots where you have trees that are just normal. They don't really draw up extra moisture. It does really, really well. I've put it in raised gardens as well, and it works great because it's so cold hardy. So I think that one, if you don't have it and you're always looking for that early, early, early spring flower, almost late winter because that's what it is, the Linton Rose is a really, really good one.
I like it. I mean, and again, we're talking about where are they now. All of these are still in your local garden centers or at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the plant, you know, the Perennial Plant Association is that they pick stalwarts. They pick guys that are going to perform for you and perform for you and perform for you mm-hmm. like nobody's business. And a lot of times, you know, we were talking about various trees and different things and hydrangeas a couple of weeks ago. Lady in Red was a hydrangea that you don't see anymore. Where right. are they now?
Right. And so it was a good plant.
It was a great plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the line of past winners for me, one that is definitely going to have a home in my backyard as I progress with my project is Amsonia hubrecti.
Mm-hmm.
I love this plant. A nice, small, dainty kind of blue bloom in the spring. I love the texture of it. I like its height. You know, it gets about 24 inches in height, give or take. You know, you might see it a little bit taller. But in the fall, the bronze color that it gives you when it starts turning is incredibly rich.
You like that one?
And when you do this in a mass planting, a drift, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
it stands out. And I tell you a place, if you've been to Christ Hospital or over in that area, the doctor's offices and buildings, there's a couple mass groupings of Amsonia hubrecti over there, and it is stunning.
You like it, huh?
I do.
You're going to have it in the backyard.
Oh, it's part of my plan.
Yeah.
Definitely, it's part of my plan.
I think the fall color on that is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fall color, and that's something with the needle-like look to it and turning that amber, copper, rust color. It really, really has an interesting look in the fall. And with some of the stuff you have in the backyard, that could look really, really good.
Right. It's one of my favorites. And there's another version of Amsonia that's out there, another cultivar, called Storm Cloud. And its blooms are a little different, more clustered, a little bit more compact mm-hmm. in a growth habit. It gets about 2 feet to, you know, 30 inches, 24, 30 inches
okay.
in height. It's a great performer as well. It's a little bit more compact. It's not as loose. or as area as Hubrecti.
Right.
But still another one, worth looking for in the garden center.
So here's one of my favorites. I use this plant quite a bit. Some people just don't like it. They think it gets too messy. 1997, Salvia May Night.
I like it. And I
mean, you're talking about 22 years ago.
And it's still
it's one of my top sellers.
Yeah. I agree with you. You know, and you can get it to repeat bloom if you cut back, you know, it's blooms.
It'll bloom twice no matter what.
It'll bloom twice. Not as prolific as the original bloom period, mm-hmm. but still, nonetheless, you'll get another bloom round.
For sure. So it blooms usually in April, April to May. At that point, you usually got to cut it back because it's not real pretty when the blooms are dead. But all you do is cut it back, leave the foliage, and it will bloom again at about 3 to 4 weeks, and you'll get some summer bloom. If we have an Indian summer and October is warm, I've actually seen three rounds of blooms on the May Night Salvia. Now, where people get in trouble on May Night Salvia is they'll put it in, they'll plant it, and they leave it alone. They don't cut it back. If you just leave, it will not bloom
right
a second time if you don't cut it back.
You have to cut it back. You can get almost three bloom periods out of it.
It's usually two. Yeah. I always tell people, you'll get two. Sometimes you get three.
Yeah, you'll definitely get two. You know, just cut it back to the basal growth.
That's 22 years ago.
I know. That's incredible, isn't it?
It is. I remember that one.
Now, there was a new one that came out, I don't know if it was last year or the year before. And it was a proven winter introduction. And it, too, is a salvia. Now, it's not one of the past perennial plant of the year award winners. But this one is well worth looking for in local nurseries and garden centers, is one called Azure Snow. It's like a blue and white.
Blue and white mixed, right?
Yes. Very, very attractive.
Yeah.
Called Azure Snow.
But that reason is probably not one of the perennial plant of the year is because it's not as readily available. And it is a winter.
That's part of it. Yeah. Right. Readily available. Mm-hmm. So, but it really, it's stunning. I've had it the last couple of seasons, and it's wonderful. It's a different look. And with that white on the bloom, that variegated bloom, it makes it pops. You know, it gives it
does.
Yeah, from a distance, it's easily identifiable. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those criterias.
Which is why it's on the list.
That's why it's on the list.
You know, and we could talk all day about this, but, you know, something I really, you know, you and I talked, you know, kind of preparing for the show, we really wanted to get into some of those shade perennials. And some of them are on this list.
Some of them are on the list.
So we're going to kind of segment into that.
I have a list, and we can also take it a little bit to the Facebook page. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We're going to take another quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, we're going to gear it up a notch. We're going to talk about some shade perennials that are a must-have in your shade perennial garden. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and it's going to be a beautiful day, you know, especially for January. High of 50, nothing but sunshine, and I'm just looking forward to that when I'm working later on today in the greenhouse. Always something to do around the garden center. And we've been talking about perennial plants, and, you know, I know, Bob, you're just as stoked as I am for the 2019 season. You know, we're working on orders and, you know, getting things timed and set up for deliveries this, you know, March and April mm-hmm. and May. And once we're in the thick of it, you know, it will be here quicker than you'll know it. And once we get into the thick of it, we'll be worn out and thinking, gosh, you know, I can't wait till July and August get here. We can take another break and then we'll ramp up for the fall. And that's just how quick the seasons go. And, you know, we were talking about perennial plants of the year and so forth in past winters. So we're going to take it into the shade side of things, onto the shady side of things when it comes to perennials. And Bob and I are going to give you 10 top, or our favorite, I should say, shade perennials. And I'll let you start off with that, Bob.
I'm going to start with my first one. And it actually was, and I didn't know, I'd forgotten.
Does it start with a B?
It does not.
Okay.
That one's later. But one of my favorites is the Japanese painted fern. The Japanese painted fern was actually perennial of the year 2004. I knew it was. I just didn't know when. But it was actually 2004. It is a beautiful silvery gray foliage. It's got some purples through it. It's got a little bit of green through it as well. It's not an aggressive spreader, but it is a really, I think, a must-have in the perennial garden.
Mm-hmm.
It can handle light shade to moderate. I think the Japanese painted fern and total 100% darkness. Sometimes struggles a little bit, but I really do find that this is a pretty good fern to have. It doesn't spread quickly. It adds a nice contrast in the landscape.
Very hardy too. It was always reliable. You know, I had it at one time and, you know, made some changes, but it was always a stalwart in my garden. And, you know, and it complemented, you know, the hostas and some of the other shade plants too.
Exactly.
So it's a great companion plant. You know, I'm going to throw one out there for you that you don't see often. In the last couple of years, I brought some in. And I don't know if you're familiar with Aruncus, goat's beard.
Yes.
You know, and this plant's not totally shade, but it appreciates shade. So if you were to give it a little bit of sun, it would definitely be the morning sun. And provide some room for this particular specimen. You know, it can get 4 to 6 foot in height and almost the same as
big.
A spread. But I really like this particular plant because of its blooms. You know, they're these like sprays of lacy, creamy blooms.
It's
a very interesting blooming plant. It flowers April through May. And it's slow growing at first, but after a first couple of seasons, it really takes off and it forms into almost like a small to medium-sized shrub.
It does. It gets pretty good size.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this particular plant, that it is dioecious. And when I say that, what does that mean? You know, I'm not trying to throw out any terms. It means that there are male and female flowers, and they are on separate plants. You know, you have one plant that has all male flowers, and you have another one that's all female. And the truth of the matter is the male flowers are more attractive than the female flowers. But the female flowers will give you a more attractive seed head going into the winter months.
Yeah, it's winter.
So, you know, there's some trade-offs right there. Unfortunately, we can't specify which one of these we have in the nursery. It's going to be one of the two.
Right.
But I like that. Aruncus goat's beard.
I'm impressed that you went there. Look at you digging deep right from the beginning.
I went to the mountain, brother.
You did. You went
in. I did. That's one that, you know, I think it deserves some merit. We don't talk about it often. But, yeah, it's check it out.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. So another one that I like, and it does start with a B, and that's Brunaria, Jack Frost.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love this plant. It was also one of the perennials of the year in 2012. It's got a green foliage with kind of silvery gray kind of in on the leaves as well. So it's two-toned, not variegated like you think. It's more, it's almost like it's like got a frost on it, almost, hence the name Jack Frost. Beautiful blue flower that sits above the foliage. This is one that looks great even without the flower. So it's really going to add that interest in the landscaping all three seasons. And then it adds a spectacular blue flower on top of the foliage, which contrasts it really, really well. The veining through the leaf is very showy, so it has that extra texture look to it as well. It blooms late spring. It doesn't last forever, which a lot of the shade perennials don't last forever. You know, some of them are a little shorter.
It doesn't bother me, though, because of what you said, the texture and the foliage itself, those heart-shaped leaves. And with that silvery gray hue to it, it brightens up a shade garden.
It's not a big spreader either. It does multiply, but it's not going to spread and take over a garden. So it works great in when you plant 3 to 5 of them. You know, it's not going to grow and be one giant mass unless you put them really close together. So if you space them out and you like to see a little mulch, they look really good even by themselves.
Right. And
really
that's Jack,
a good foliage.
Yeah, Jack Frost, I mean, it was a perennial plant of the year, like you said, and it's a must-have in a shade garden. I agree with you. That's a good one.
All right.
Can't beat that one. You know, another one that you don't see it often, but the variegated form of it is incredible, and it really shows up in a shade garden as well because of the variegation. And that's what I'm going for.
I know.
Is that variegated
contrast.
Look. Yeah, it pops. Is Solomon's Seal.
Oh, yeah.
Polygonatum. First time I saw this plant, it was along with another one I'll tell you about, but was at the Alt Park Flower Show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when the Cincinnati Flower Show was the Cincinnati Flower Show, in my opinion, when it was at Alt Park. It's a great perennial, holds up all season long. It has these white bell-shaped flowers, and I'm talking about Solomon seal, mm-hmm. and they kind of hang or dangle off of those arching branches as they move outward away from the plant. And it can take some deep shade.
It can take deep shade. I was going to say, that was something that I really know. It is sometimes a little finicky, though. Sometimes, you know, I think this, it's just my opinion. That's one that I've had. It's a great plant, but sometimes it's a little finicky.
Once it's in the ground, I think the element of it being finicky, and you can differ with me on this, I think it's when you're trying to propagate it and grow it.
Yeah.
And I think that's when it gets tough, you know, because you knew really those rhizomes, they kind of... They're right on top.
Right.
And I think that has something to do with it.
It's not a deep root.
No, it's not a deep root.
No, that's a good one. So I'm going to stay in the letter P, because that's where you were at. One of my favorites, and we talked about this before, was pulmonaria, lungwort.
Hey, that's on my list.
I absolutely love it. Now, it's a medium shade grower. Once again, it's about the foliages and the textures.
Right.
You know, this one's not going to be as tall. It does stay a little bit lower to the ground. Kind of spreads and creeps a little bit. The flower then stretches out above the foliage, and it's on top. There's a couple different types of varieties, so you'll get a few different color flowers from depending on the variety. But this one works, once again, really good underneath a tree. Like if you have something in the front landscaping where it's shaded most of the time, maybe with just a little bit of sun late in the day or early in the morning or filtered through the leaves, you're going to really have some good luck with the pulmonaria. Absolutely love this plant. The only disadvantage is sometimes it's not easy to find.
No, it's not. And, you know, it's an early bloomer, too, mm-hmm. in a shade garden. I do like that one. One of my favorites in the pulmonaria, you know, lungwort, is Diana Claire.
Yeah.
That one's a hard one to find.
It is.
Usually you see Mrs. Moon. What are some of the other ones? Majesty was supposed to be another good one, too.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ones.
Yeah, you don't see that one too often. I agree with you. I like that one. Mm-hmm. Really, really do. You know, there's another one that this is a tough shade perennial. And once it's established, boy, can it take drought. I have some down in my backyard. It's been there for years. It's long, long lived. And that's Epimedium.
Okay.
And that's also known, it goes under a common name called barren wort.
Yep.
It's about a foot in height, maybe a foot and a half. The one that I have is called Sulfurium, and it gets a yellow bloom. And once it's established, it's one of the best for dry shade, bar none.
Can it handle dark shade too?
Yes. I mean, it's tucked down in deep down in my woodland area next to my shed.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one that, you know, the way the leaves are kind of, they're kind of elongated, but heart-shaped.
I was going to say, they're heart-shaped, aren't they? And they cover the ground?
Yeah, and they get, sometimes they'll take on a brownish hue, and that's when the veining in that heart-shaped leaf really stands out. And it's not really noted or touted for its bloom. It's just for its foliage look, its durability, and what it can provide you in the shade garden, and it tolerates dry shade. It's a great one. This is one that I saw, too, years ago at Alt Park.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
Yeah.
Is there any particular shade perennial you don't like? Because I have one that there's one I would not recommend in most applications. So I'm going to throw a twist at you. We didn't talk about this. I'm going
to
throw
something
at you.
I have to really think about that.
So here, I'm going to bring it up then. Let me bring one up and see if you think. Houtenia. Chameleon plant.
When you sell that, you better sell somebody a spray bottle of Roundup or Kills.
And even then, you're still. So this is it actually is a beautiful looking plant.
It is.
It has a variegated foliage. It's got some pinks and yellows and greens. It is when you look at it, you could say that's a pretty plant. I really like it. It's not considered aggressive. It's considered very aggressive.
It's invasive. I mean, it also loves moisture.
It will go crazy. So if you're out in the garden center and you see it, make sure you know what you're buying. Because this is one of those where if you put it in, you will have it.
For a long time.
Forever.
Yeah. It's we always jokingly say, when you buy that, you should give somebody a bottle of Roundup.
Yes. But it is Houtenia. And I bring it up just so we can educate the listeners. When you're out there, you know, you might see it because I've sold this before, but there's always a red flag by it. So I can explain, this is what it does.
Why would you sell it? I don't carry it anymore.
Well, I haven't carried it for years, but I did sell it in the past. But I don't sell it anymore because I don't want people to plant it because it goes so crazy.
Yeah, but it might be for the person that really struggles to grow something.
Well, if you have something on a hillside,
hillside,
and you're
shade,
having
moisture,
massive erosion,
yeah.
and you've got acres and acres and acres for something to run as far as it wants to go, this would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
The deer aren't going to eat it. Nothing's going to stop it. But it really does grow. But you don't see it really much in the garden center, but I wanted to bring it up because it's on a lot of shade lists as a plant, but you got to know what you're buying.
Right. You know, when you asked me that question, are there some that you wouldn't plant? There's kind of one that I kind of feel like that, but I really like it, and it has its application in a shade garden, especially if it's dry shade. But sometimes if it gets ratty, the benefit of this particular plant is you can cut it back and it comes back relatively well.
Right.
Lamium, spotted dead nettle.
Yes.
It can look really good.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could look really rough.
I do like lamium, actually.
But hold on to that thought. I'm not downing, you know, lamium, spotted dead nettle is a common name for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one, sometimes it really looks good or it looks bad, but you can always cut it back and rest assured it's going to respond favorably and look nice and clean again. 749-B105, if you want to chime in and tell us some of your favorite perennials or you want to ask us about some perennials, it seems like that's what we're really dialing in on today. And give us a shout. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you look outside, sky is clear. The sun's getting ready to pop up. And we're going to see a high of 50 today with nothing but sunshine. And rub that all over you today and enjoy it. Because when you get that, those kind of days, these kind of days in January, I'll take it. What about you, Bob?
This is going to be great.
It's going to be great. You got a lot of work to do today, so...
Well, apparently I got to go trim Steve's grasses today. You know, Steve, when he called
you
in.
You better show up. I think you you volunteered Doug. Does Doug
know? I did. Did you notice how I did that?
Yeah.
I pushed it off on somebody else.
Doug's back's hurting. I know that.
Yeah, he's got to carry me.
He's got to carry you. But we'll continue along with our discussion with some shade perennials, and then this next segment we'll finish up with that. And then at the top of the hour as we come back in, we'll talk about some foundation plantings, and also in the 8 o'clock hour, talk about pathways, some interesting things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we left off in that prior segment with lamium, spotted dead nettle. And, you know, I mentioned sometimes it can get ratty, but the real benefit of that happening is that you can trim it back and it responds favorably. Do you have any favorites when it comes to lamium or spotted dead nettle?
You know,
because I always think of Beacon Silver.
As you say, the Beacon Silver is a really, really good one. The Purple Dragon is kind of cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets that purple flower to it as well. Orchard Frost really is got a lot of white in it. You know, there's a lot of white in the foliage, so I really like that one. But, you know, don't you find it interesting that we both like this particular plant, and yet dead nettle we consider a weed in the lawn?
Yeah, dead nettle is a weed in the lawn. Absolutely.
You know, but it is a really cool plant. I do like this one. I know it's not used as much just because it does get a little ratty, but I like that plant.
It's great,
I would like to use more of it.
It's kind of shallow rooted, too. It's great underneath trees, and it tolerates, you know, dryness. So, you know, when you go into that drought period, it's okay.
Yeah.
It only gets like 8 to 12 inches in height, a nice, about a 2-foot spread.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one well worth considering. You know, I didn't mean it to sound like, you know, do I struggle with it? No, but I think it's well worth having.
It is, especially because a lot of shade perennial gardens, you got space usually. You know, it's underneath trees or,
right.
You know, along those lines. So I think you could really be happy with that one. So I'm going to go with a real common one. It's going to be common, and they're going to be like, oh, well.
That's all right.
You know, but I like it. And that's the liriope.
Oh, yeah.
Monkey grass. I mean, I know it sounds really simple.
You're not going to call it liriope?
Liriope?
Liriope.
Love
it. Yeah,
liriope.
You know, it's a standout. I mean, it has its place. Sometimes I think, you know, it can be overused because of its, you know, it's
easy.
The way it performs, it's easy. Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah.
You know, and it can tolerate light shade. It's not going to go into the dark, dark, dark shade. It's just not. I mean, the green will. Let me rephrase that. Sometimes the big blue variety will.
The green will. But I found that the green has kind of been on the deer's menu, so to speak. They like liriope, too. But I don't see them bother. Now, you might have seen something different than myself, but I don't see them really bothering the variegated as much as the green.
Honestly, sometimes they don't bother it at all, sometimes they bother all of it. You know, sometimes they'll pull them out of the ground before we really get out of the driveway if we've put it in for somebody. So, you know, it's just one of those where it just depends on what their appetite is. But what I love about the big blue is if you have an area where you're going to need a bunch of it, it multiplies pretty quickly and you can split it very easily. You know, if you plant a 1 gallon in 2 years, you can divide that into about 4 or 5 plants.
Oh yeah. It's aggressive.
It will spread.
Yeah.
So
it's really good for hillsides, some shady areas, you know, with a little bit of sun.
Borders.
It's great in a mass planting.
Mm-hmm.
So it has its place. I think sometimes now, you know, landscapers might argue this with me, but I think they tend to use it a little too much.
Used a lot.
Yeah, it's used a lot.
Especially if you get into some of the commercial lots, we're like, oh, let's go get 100 liriope.
Yeah, it's easy. And it's the same way, you know, I felt the same way with the knockout rose. You know, landscapers, it's like they got onto something and they used it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, diversify a little bit. You know, I think everything has its application, but I think you start overrunning plantings and beds with the same thing and you see it all throughout, it gets a little monotonous.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you need something easy and you can't get out and do a whole lot of work, because it does give you a purple flower, gives mm-hmm. you a little berry on it as well. So, I mean, that's why I still like it, you know, because it is somewhat easy. So if maybe in the past you were a gardener who got out in your garden every day, but you're not capable of doing that now, this might be one you could add to the garden because it really is almost self-maintaining. And if it's a mild winter like we've had, it'll stick around.
Yeah, no, I like it. And blooms in the fall, get the nice little purpley like spike bloom in the fall. You know, I'm gonna go with one that probably most people who are familiar with this particular perennial, shade perennial, might be on the fence about it for a couple of reasons. I'll tell you in just a second. But I like Bleeding Hearts. I like Dicentra.
Okay. Yeah.
I really do. And it's on our, and I like it so well enough, I put it on our Facebook page. And you can see one of them, one of my favorites is Gold Hearts. Gold Heart. It's got that nice chartreuse foliage with a pinkish bloom. And Bleeding Hearts are just that. These blooms, they arch outward. They hang down underneath the stem, and they look like hearts. And, you know, this particular variety, I like Dicentra Spectabilis, and there's also Dicentra Formosa. Luxuriant is the one you commonly see. But a lot of times people don't like Spectabilis because a lot of times if the summers, they do get hot around here,
mm-hmm.
that plant might disappear.
Yeah, it does.
It kind of fades out.
Well, it can.
But the show that it gives you before it leaves and the curtains are drawn and the show's over is incredible.
I think it's a good plant.
It's a great plant. But although it kind of may wane off in the hot summer months, rest assured, she's going to see you next spring and give you another wonderful show and performance.
If you really get up close and look at the flower on it,
mm-hmm.
it's very interesting.
It's very, very interesting.
It is a really neat flower, and it's one, especially if you got a spot in the back where you need something maybe a smidge taller, you know, where if it disappears for the summer, like you said, it's no big deal. You got other stuff around
You have other stuff around it.
Yeah, it works great for that. So it may not be the main feature, but it's one of those accent pieces where, you know, if you're trying to fill that spot where you need something with a little bit of size, but it's not going to be the focal point, I like it.
If my memory is good, when I really first saw this plant at its best was at the Civic Garden Center,
mm-hmm.
right up the street here.
Yep.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was underneath an older established beech tree, and it was beautiful. It was outstanding. Check it out.
Yeah.
I also like the original, the common one. It's just pink. And also, I like the white
mm-hmm.
Alba. So you're not going to go wrong with this plant. And the other variety that doesn't wane off in the summer months, that hangs on for the most part, is one called Dicentra Formosa. That's another type of bleeding heart.
Mm-hmm.
And its foliage is a little bit different. It's more of a lacy kind of fern-like foliage, kind of like a dissected look. But it won't wane off. But, you know, if you're okay with that, it's fine. You know, you're not going to – sometimes it will bloom again later in the season.
Right.
And there's another one I'm not that familiar with, and it kind of came out a few years ago with a darker blooming heart on it called Burning Heart. And it had like a lacy fern-like foliage or leaf to it. But you don't see it as readily like you used to.
You
when
don't
it first
see
was...
as many bleeding hearts as you used to
no,
in general.
No,
It's not used as much.
But why? That's the question. And check them out on our Facebook page.
Yeah, they're really cool.
They're lovely in a garden, and they're great companion plants in a shade garden with other things like hostas and heucheras and so forth.
So much
ferns.
Yeah. You know, there's so many shade perennials. We could do 4 shows on shade perennials.
Easily. All right, we're going to wind it up and take another quick break. Give us a call, 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some foundation plantings. We're going to take it to the shrub world. Some things you want to consider if you're thinking evergreens or if you're okay with things that loses its foliage that's deciduous. We're going to tell you some foundation plants that might really enhance your landscape. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery is hanging out with me in the studio today. And we've been talking a lot about perennials and so forth. And we're going to switch it up a little bit and talk about some shrubs. And in particular, you know, shrubs that make for really good foundation plants around your home. You know, and when we talk about foundation plants and so forth, it's not just plants that cover up the concrete foundation. You know, this encompasses the front, the back, the sides of the home. They can have various heights and so forth.
I think that's key that you just said. So before you get into what do you put in, it's what are you trying to accomplish? And, you know, there's so many things you need to take into consideration even before you pick the plant. So some of the things that I would look for, you know, some texture. I want to look, do I need some? Is it supposed to be just a hedge? Is it supposed to be nice and tight? Is it supposed to be, you know, kind of framing windows to where you're going to actually take those gas hedge shears and you're going to make a perfect line across the top? You know, I'm going to look at structure. You know, do I want some verticality to it? Do I want...
Verticality?
How about that?
Is that a word?
No, I just made that up.
Are you making words up? Because
I'm
the king of making words up.
There you go.
Verticality.
But, you know, does it need that vertical height? Does it, you know, what's the structure of the whole landscape going to be to where, is it going to be the backdrop? Is it going to be the focal point? So there's a lot that goes into foundation plants other than just walking in saying, I want 3 of those evergreen boxwoods and that's what I'm going to put.
No, I agree with you. You know, it's what the line is to look like and, you know, what type of exposure do you have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it you're trying to set out and achieve? You want something low, you want something mounding, you want something pyramidal.
What about your color scheme?
Your color scheme. Do you want something with some yellow or gold in it? Do you want something that's evergreen? Mm-hmm. You know, do you want to combine those? A lot of times I think what's really stunning when you look at a foundation setting or a planting or a grouping is when you can mix the golds with some of the reds and some of the blues. It really pops and it creates interest and it captivates you. It captures your eye and when you walk up to the front of a home or the back of a home or side yard of a home, it pulls you in.
You know, does it steer you to even the foundation planting? A lot of that is going to steer you to the prettier part of the house. So you're going to maybe take the foundation planting and camouflage the parts of the house that aren't as aesthetically appealing to maybe around, usually around a front door, there's some extra trim boards or woodwork or the glass on the door is beautiful. So you want to try to take some of your foundation plants and steer your eye to those parts of the house.
Absolutely. And, you know, something else too is what color is your brick? What color is your siding? What color is the wood? You know,
if you got a dark burgundy brick and you throw a burgundy Burberry in front of it, you're not going to see it.
It just gets lost in there. But here's one element I really want to hone in on, we're not going to discuss it in any great detail. But when it comes to planting around your home, let's say you have windows around your foundation and so forth, or your front door, or your front window, do not plant something that gets too big for security reasons.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, safety's first, and a lot of times, you know, I don't want to say this, but when burglars can hide, you know, that's what they like, things they can hide around where they're not seen. So take those things into consideration, your basement windows, you know, your front door. If the doorbell rings, You want to be able to look out there through your window and see who it is if you're not expecting anybody. So think about the safety element, too, when it comes to foundation plantings.
Well, and also, let's take the safety element out just for a second, even though it's really important. But let's talk about the aesthetics. How many times have you walked up to a friend's house or even your own house and the bushes are hanging over the sidewalk? You got to turn sideways just to get to the front door, and it feels like you're walking into the dungeon.
I feel welcomed.
Uh-huh. You know.
Excuse me.
Like, let's go down there. Let's you know.
Will you get this off of me?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's you don't want the stuff. You got to know what you're planting and how big it's going to get. Sometimes it's pretty cool to have. There was one house we did in particular this year where they had three sweet bay magnolias on the front sidewalk. It was kind of a circular driveway to the front of the house, and then you walked to the sidewalk kind of, and it would snake and kind of have an S turn through, and they'd planted these strategically and then limbed them up so you walk underneath it to see everything. It actually was really cool, even though it was tall, because they limbed it up enough you could see the front door and see the architecture, and you knew where you were going, so it wasn't dark,
right?
But it had a canopy.
It had a canopy, and you felt kind of safe. It led you up to that, to the front
door.
So
in that aspect, it was really kind of neat to have something a little bigger.
Well thought out, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And also one of my favorite things, you're getting that multi-stem look with the sweet bay magnolia.
Right.
And it's also semi-evergreen during relatively mild winters.
Right. So another important thing when you're talking about your foundation planting, and I think this is a big one, how many people buy a little tiny plant and put it way too close to the house? You know, they plant it 6 inches from the foundation because that's where it looks good right now. But that plant's going to get 5 feet wide, and all of a sudden it's growing into the house, and you're taking your shears and you're just butchering the back of it. So when you look outside from your windows, you see a dead plant. How many times do you see that happen?
Oh, it happens more often than not.
So you got to make sure when you're planting, you are planting far enough off the foundation. One, you can get back in there if you need to clean the brick, clean the windows, do a little painting. You wouldn't always have room anyway. So when you plant your foundation plants, especially from the beginning, most of the time they should look like you've planted them too far away from the house.
No, and absolutely. And don't overcrowd it, because ultimately what will end up happening is everything will grow into one another.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to make a decision. But before people make that decision, a lot of times, Bob, I seem to think that they allow it to happen too long, where things grow into one another. Then all of a sudden, when you, in fact, remove something, the side of the plant it was growing into is bare.
Yeah, so you got to remove it all.
It's distorted. Mm-hmm. Right, you have to remove everything. So don't go for that instant effect. Allow things to grow to their capabilities, their average heights, in the right space.
So here I got something for you. You're going to be like, what? Are you serious? So you've always heard we got to plant 1s, 3s, and 5s.
Yep.
And normally I agree with that.
Yep.
But there are times where it's okay to plant 2 or 4 or 6.
Well, you can tell me that when we come back out of the break. 749-B105. Listen in, because this is going to be an interesting topic that we're going to talk about when we talk about foundation plants and what Bob just said. I like odd numbers, and I'll tell you why when we come back. Welcome back to In and Around the House, and boy, it's something just to see the sun coming up over there off the horizon.
I'm not going to back down from us fighting on the break. On
well,
two
you better back down because
I'm
odd
not
numbers,
down.
1, 3, and 5. You tell me why it's 2, 4, and 6.
I'm not. I didn't say that.
You weren't listening close enough. No, I was. You said there are situations when 2, 4, or whatever are acceptable.
There are.
And when would that be? When is that?
So let's talk about, maybe you have a front of a house where you have 4 windows, or 2 windows and 4 shutters, okay? And you say, I just want a simple, pretty landscape. I want low maintenance as I can be. I'm probably going to try to steer you to 3 plants, you know, where we put 1 in between the window and then maybe on the outside shutter and leave a little more space. However, there has been occasion where people are like, you know, I really want a hedge. And and there's only 4 windows. And sometimes those windows are skinny, so you might only have about 10 feet. But they want 1 underneath each shutter to make it match the house, because that's their taste. It's not wrong, not mine necessarily,
well,
but that's what they want.
I see that. I don't see any wrong in that.
There's nothing wrong with it.
No, and you can break rules. Not that that's a rule to play in odd numbers. It's just it's a starting point.
Right.
And really, in that situation, it's all about the overall structure of the house, mm-hmm. how it's designed, and in relation to how you design around it.
Correct.
So that would come into play most
now,
definitely.
Now, how I would steer that, if they wanted the hedge, I might try to also, besides planting just three, maybe if there's a little bit more space, I might plant five where I put three foundation plants, like an evergreen. Let's just say a gold mop cypress. And maybe I throw a couple barberry in front and I zigzag those. So there's five plants. Then there's only two barberry, which is an even number, but it's really yeah. one and one.
Right.
So you're still kind of breaking it up, and it's five total plants in the landscape. So sometimes it's not a breaking the rule, like you said, but sometimes two might work better.
Oh, yeah. I've planted two of things. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to give you a little.
I know. If people saw us in the studio in between the break there, they might have seen it. They might be like, whoa. What's
it got really ugly. We put the gloves on.
And then Alex plays Don't Back Down from Tom Petty. You know, perfect timing.
But, yeah, you know, it's really, and going back to your original approach when you're designing a landscape is, what is your objective? What is the look that you're going for and with what plants based on the criteria that, you know, you want that plant to be? You know?
So we're talking about it. So I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
I'm at your house right now, and you're going to rip out everything, and you're going to do a new foundation planting.
Wow.
Where are you starting? Put you on the spot, didn't I?
Where am I going to start? You yep. know, probably in the evergreen world.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm going to start first because, you know, I like deciduous things. As, you know, I'm a fall kind of guy. I like the fall season. And I like the turning of the leaves, the colors. But there is a point when, you know, evergreens are of the essence. Now, when we talk about foundation plantings, when we built our house, I didn't want all the concrete foundation, you know, which was where the basement is.
Right.
So I had them step the brick down.
So you thought ahead before right. you got to that stage and just having
exactly.
six, because you're the back of your house would have had 8 feet of concrete.
Right.
If you would have left it that way.
Right.
Because there's a lot, because it's exposed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I have a walkout basement and
right.
so forth. So, you know, it depends on what the foundation looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I would start out with some evergreens and probably one. There's two that I'm going to start out with something low sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a holly.
Okay.
And it's going to be one called Emerald Magic.
Oh,
sometimes,
yeah.
So sometimes called Little Rascal.
Mm-hmm.
A nice, glossy, tight, smaller shaped holly leaf.
Right.
I think these in a grouping are very stunning, as well as a soft touch holly, which I like a lot, but can be very tricky when you first initially plant a soft touch. Now, I don't know what kind of experience you've had with soft touch, but a lot of times homeowners who buy that particular cultivar don't water them early enough or often enough as you're getting established. And mm-hmm. I think after that point, they're okay. Now,
they're sitting in water. Haven't had much
no,
luck with them at
no.
all. But
no.
you have to raise bed where you control the moisture. They're really good.
But I like the daintiness of them, the size of those. And I could take it with the boxwoods, too, because you can't go wrong with the boxwood or so many different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking evergreen to answer your question.
Yeah, I would definitely start evergreen. Whenever I'm designing, I'm always start that. That's usually the first place I start is the foundation because it is the backdrop. Mm-hmm. It's the backdrop of all the other stuff you put in front of it. So you've got to include that as a major part of the landscape, because if you're going to put flowers in front and you want to use yellow lantana, you're not going to put a gold foliage behind it.
No.
You're going to throw a green, and preferably probably a really dark green, so the gold pops. So the foundation plants for me, you always start evergreen. And even if you're going to use an evergreen as a focal point, you know, maybe that you swing off the corner, you want... Once again, here it comes.
That's height.
Verticality.
Verticality.
So you want to get that.
Alex, look that up for me, will you? I thought I made words up. I don't know if that's a word, but it is today.
It is today. It is. And I think people understand what I'm talking about. But, you know, it really, sometimes that evergreen, you know, that Blue Atlas Cedar or, you know, one of my favorites, and I always talk about it, I love the Glow Blue Spruce on a standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have that kind of maybe off the porch, off a corner, and then you throw some color around it. You know, it is an evergreen. It's not necessarily the foundation, but it's got to be included as part of that foundation plant when you're doing the boxwood or the gold mop. What's it going with?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look from the street, which is where 99% of the people see your landscaping, and they're looking at it from sitting back so many feet, it's all got to fit together.
You know, I will tell you something that I think that gets a black eye, but it has its application, and that's the arborvitae, emerald green,
mm-hmm.
or maybe North Pole. You know, when you're on a corner of a house, and you know, you have to also take into consideration, you know, now this is giving you that pyramidal vertical look,
mm-hmm.
and then you know you can. Now, some people will, and it's got a narrow profile.
Right.
And I tell you, I will say this, they can look really, really good, or they can look awful.
Right.
You know, that's the problem, but you have to take care of them. But when they look good, I think when you have a ranch-style house with that kind of height, when you're working with the emerald green or North Pole arborvitae, it's not too big. It anchors a corner, and then you can come out in front of it with something that might have a little bit of a gold color to it,
mm-hmm.
or maybe something a little bit of red or the blue, and it gives you that combination. So what's your take on the arborvitae? Did you find that word?
I like the arborvitae.
Bob, you're in. He gave me the thumbs up.
Go.
Verticality.
Yeah, okay. it's just basically vertical. You just, you know, vertical.
I was going to bring you in a coupon today. I saw it the other day for Smart Water because I know you drink a lot.
I do. Today I got my Sharp Water.
Sharp Water.
Okay. Today's Sharp Water. So, but, you know, going back to the arborvitae, I have some arborvitae.
Mm-hmm.
I have upright gold, which I love. And then I also have a traditional emerald green. As long as you don't have a deer issue, you're fine.
That's another one, right?
You know, so when we think about foundation plants, like one, here we go. I'm going back a long time. So Grandpa back in the 70s used to order semi-loads of Taxus yews.
Mm-hmm.
And they are everywhere in a house that was built from 1950 to 1970. That's what, they're the hedges all the way around. But I'll tell you what, they're a great plant. I ripped out some hollies that eventually got too big because I've been in my house 17 years. I put in some Taxus. And guess what? I don't do nothing to them except trim. They're a great plant. I don't have a deer issue, so the deer don't eat them. They can be a great hedge. I've actually kind of flattened them out and
right.
got a really low hedge in front of the windows. They're a great plant, and they make a great backdrop.
What did you plant? Which cultivar?
Densiformis?
Densiformis. Got it.
Yeah, I just went Densiformis.
You
it's
know,
tough. It's durable.
They're tough. They
and
are
I'm durable. Selling more of them. Because people are kind of getting tired of boxwood.
Do you think they're coming back a little bit?
Sure. I can tell you they are, just based on my numbers.
Yeah, I don't sell a lot of the taxes, the use.
Most people don't, but when you get the right person.
Well, when you're doing installs too, right. I think there's an application for them. I really do, and they'll take shade.
Nobody our age wanted taxes.
No.
You know why? Because your dad said, go out there and get the hedge trimmers and trim the bushes. And you had to go out there when you were a teenager and you didn't want to do it and you had to go trim it. I can't tell you how many people have been in my garden center and said, I don't want those. When I was a kid, my dad made me trim those all the time. So I don't want those. I want something different.
But
you know what? This generation only had boxwood planted and over and over and over mm-hmm. and over. So it's going to be interesting to see if the millennials
go.
Who want things a little bit easier and they're making it simpler. Let's face it, the Taxus is a pretty simple plant.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We're on the subject of shrubs and foundation plantings, and if you want to chime in, certainly feel free to do so, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and again, joining me today in the studio is Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery, and we've been talking foundation plants and various things to consider when you're setting up your landscape and planting various things around the foundation. And we do have a question. We have a caller on the line, Diane. Diane, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing well. So what are you thinking? What's going on?
All right. So I've got a bi-level home. And when we moved in, we had three small bushes in front of the window that's partly underground, and then you see a little bit outside. But then the neighbor had like 10 feral cats.
Oh, okay.
And they used it as a bathroom and destroyed two of the bushes. Now, they only have like two feral cats left. I wondered, we had to pull all three out. And I wondered if there was any bush that was could stand the, in case they come back, if they could stand the ammonia from the urine and whatnot.
Well, you know, I can't really answer that because I don't know what's tolerant to that kind of a situation. But, yeah, that when those things happen, especially with dogs too, that becomes a problem. Then there's a, a plant burn, you know, plant struggle. You know, something I would encourage you maybe to do, and this doesn't sound good, but it would probably help you with a lot of that situation, is sometimes before you mulch around your shrubs, roll out, lay out chicken wire and use landscape pins and pin that down.
Oh, yeah.
And because when cats go to the bathroom, they like to scratch and cover up where they're going to the bathroom. And once they start scratching and hitting the chicken wire, they're going to go somewhere else. I know that doesn't sound friendly, but if it's really a problem like that and they're feral cats, which is even worse, that's not a situation I would want to be in, nor would I want if I had kids around to be in. But I would certainly consider doing something of the sort until you remedied the problem. Okay. That's where I would start versus trying to look for something and not really knowing if it would withstand that kind of activity that you're talking about with the feral cats. But, you know, I have another question. It's very interesting. You talk about a bi-level home. Is part of that cantilevered out to where, you know, it kind of jets out maybe a foot and a half from the foundation at various levels?
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is one of those interesting situations when we talk about the situation at hand, right underneath those cantilevers, the soil is always extremely, extremely dry.
Yeah.
And it makes it very difficult for some plants to do well there unless you keep up with your watering tactics. Bobby,
yeah, and if,
shed some light on
I sometimes, you know, different things, if, you know, you don't have a ton of cats, but my neighbor actually used some cayenne pepper on top of the mulch where they were going
because
his neighbor was using my cypress mulch as the box. And I'm like, hey, you know, can we do something about this, you know? And he's like, hey, just this is what I've used in my yard. And so he brought over some cayenne pepper, threw it on top of the mulch, and it worked. I mean, it just got rid of the cats. So they just quit going in there. I mean, when they go in there and walk in there and then lick their paws, I'm sure they were on fire a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's more humane. You're not going to hurt. You're not going to kill them it. But it did work. But especially with, you know, going back to foundation planting, you know, make sure you stay off that eave. You got to stay off from where that overhang is, or nothing's going to grow. It will dry out and die eventually.
And you know, go ahead. I'm sorry, Diane.
I have one more question. So on the bi-levels, they've got that one section that slants down. I've tried a couple bushes there, and I don't know if it's the slanting or
when you say
the combination
it's like a grade.
Yeah, the so grade. It's almost like a. I'll say maybe a 35-degree grade downward.
Kind of between your sidewalk and driveway area?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as long as you're using a really durable evergreen in there, like maybe a blue Pacific juniper that kind of spreads, or even sometimes the ornamental grasses, as long as you're using the small ones, will do quite well in those areas. And if worse comes to worse, because I had a bi-level, so our first house, I actually put in a small retaining wall where I could raise it up a little bit and put some good topsoil in there. And I had a Japanese maple. I had all my annuals in there, and they would do quite well. And I only had about I think it was a 16-inch retaining wall where I raised it up, and it really made a big difference. And it just really made a big difference on the front of the house, especially in the summer when I could add all those annuals, because that's what really popped the color.
That's a good idea.
So, yeah, that's a challenging issue right there.
It is.
And you built a wall. You walled that up so you can put soil in there.
I did. And then I had wave petunias hanging over that wall.
Right.
So in the summertime, you couldn't see the wall. All you saw was the flower of the wave petunia because they do really well in an application like that. And it was absolutely gorgeous. I love pulling up to my house all summer long. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, try that out. And, you know, and if you need somebody to take a look at that for you, you know, Bob certainly can. Where are you calling in from, Diane?
Mount Washington.
I know Bart down there at Burger can help out if you want to take a picture. He can probably help guide you quite a bit on that as well. Feel free to come see me. You know, there's a lot of guys out there that can definitely help you with that situation. And if you want to do it yourself, sometimes that one's not too hard of an application because you're kind of framed in with the sidewalk and driveway.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Real quick, Cat Scram is another product you might want to try. I do have a few customers that swear by it. I've never personally used it, but you can find that at your local garden centers and nurseries if you still have a cat issue.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, have a good weekend. Thanks, Diane.
You as well. You're welcome. Bye.
All right, we're going to continue our foundation discussion, and before we conclude our show, too, we're going to talk a little bit about pathways as well. So if you have anything you want to add or any questions you might have, like Diane, feel free to give us a call at 749-B105 in and around the house. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And gosh, you know, we're just sitting here in the studio looking towards the south side of the river and off to the east there. The sun is beautiful.
It's coming over the hill. It's beautiful.
Man, it's just going to be one of those days. High of 50 today, and enjoy it. Get out and do something meaningful, worthwhile, fun, and, you know, it just take advantage of it. We don't get many days like this in
not in January. January.
Not in January, that's for sure. Stay connected with us on our Facebook page. Also, feel free to give us a shout-out on our email and around the house at b105.com. Also, give us a call, 749-B105. And also, if you want to catch a past show, you can certainly do that by going out to our website and getting onto the podcast. Alex does a great job keeping up with that. And we're going to continue our discussion here with foundation plantings and so forth. We were talking about, you know, we kind of prefer to start out with some evergreens to kind of build upon. But it doesn't always have to be evergreens, does it, Bob? Deciduous things that if you're like me, I really love fall color when it comes to foliage. And I can tell you some of my favorites in a moment, but, you know, Bob, it can be deciduous plants. That's fine and dandy.
Well, and I'll tell you what, as a designer, and I've said this on this program, you want four seasons of interest. And sometimes that does include plants dropping leaves and having some good foliage to it, or some good branch structure to it. But it is okay to have plants along the foundation, especially when you're talking about, you know, maybe even in the side or in the back where you want to add just something simple down the side like some burning bush or some lilacs or, you know, hydrangeas. Something that's going to be sticks in the winter where it doesn't matter as much because you don't see it as much all winter long. You know, but even in the front, if you want to add, you know, a piece here and there, I still think in the front having some evergreen is really important. But if you want to throw a piece or two in that would lose its leaves in the foundation planting, I think that would be okay.
Mm-hmm. We have, Janice? I'm sorry. Janice, good morning. I'm having a hard time reading some chicken scratch here, but that's how it goes. Good morning, Janice. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
We're doing well. So you have some questions about some shrubs?
Yeah, you were talking about the shrubs that were real deer resistant and low maintenance, and I didn't catch the name of those shrubs.
Well, there's a bunch of different ones that you can use out there. Are you talking about something lower, or do you want something that gets some pretty good size to it?
Probably like, something that wouldn't get any higher than like 4 or 5 feet.
We've got a lot of options there. There's many different type of juniper that you can use in that area: sea green juniper, gray owl juniper, Gold Coast. Any of those are going to give you some nice texture. Any of the cypresses are going
to
have really good luck.
Real deer resistant.
Boxwoods.
My son's house and he has deer that are eating the ewes that are in front of.
Yeah, ewes are not deer resistant. Ewes are deer food. So switch it to.
Well, he's hoping that they'll eat them until they're gone.
Well, this winter, if it gets to be pretty cold and there's not much to eat, they'll probably eat them all the way down to the bark. I've seen that happen. So. But unfortunately, they'll probably come back, so he may have to rip them out. But cypress.
You were saying that there was something that you were recommending because people have used boxwoods. You were just talking about it,
right?
And I didn't catch the name of those.
Well, that would be definitely going back to juniper, sea green juniper, old gold juniper, the cypress plants. Like I said, would be good. Any of your spruces, like a bird nest spruce, along those lines, you're going to have pretty good luck with. The deer are not going to touch. So there's actually quite a bit that you can choose. globe blue spruce, yeah, if globe. He wants to get a blue color to it. So even though if he wants more evergreen, you can really do a beautiful color landscaping with evergreens by using some golds, greens, and blues. And if you stick with juniper, cypress, spruces, you're going to be in good shape. If you want to stay away from the boxwoods, I think you'll be real happy.
Janice, what's the exposure of the area you're describing that you're in need of some plants? Is it sun? Is it shade? Because you said there's a U there now, so which would do?
I think it's sun.
Okay.
The front of his house is pretty sunny.
Got it. You know, and it doesn't have to be an evergreen if you don't want to go that route either. You know, some of the hydrangeas that like sun, little lime, little quick fire, fire light, they're well behaved. They're kind of short in stature. They're not the taller varieties. You know, those might be some good alternatives or different ideas.
Is he really busy where he can't do a lot of maintenance on his landscaping?
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe you stick with some of the evergreens, but even, you know, to mix in some color, throw in a few perennials that the deer won't eat. We had mentioned Walker's Low, the catmint usually is a pretty good one. Maybe some of the salvia or the coreopsis will add some color and some interest in there.
Amsonia would.
Amsonia, we talked about that one. So there's a lot he can use, you know, and there's, if he, you say he's on the west side?
The house probably faces, I think it faces west.
Where is his house located?
Oh, Northern Kentucky.
Northern Kentucky. Yeah, I mean, you can go out and see Scott at Maddox. You can go see Todd at Baton's Nursery. Stop down and see Tony at Jackson. I mean, there's a lot of guys that can help steer him in the right direction. And, you know, if you start talking to them now, they can give you some ideas, and then you'll be ready to start planting in the spring. Or you can have some of those guys install it if you need.
Take a photograph of the area and get the exposure, the amount of sun, some measurements. That's important, too.
Okay.
You know, we don't want to overgrow the, you know, we don't want the area to become overgrown. You know, Bob was talking about the junipers, the sea green and so forth. You know, they'll get to a certain height, but they get a nice spread. So, right. You know, you got to have the area that will accommodate those kind of growth habits.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. Well, have a great weekend. Thanks, Janice. Hope we helped you out there.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, all those things come into play, you know, when we talk about foundation plants. And you know, something else you mentioned a moment ago before we took the call with Janice, you were talking about some burning bushes.
Mm-hmm.
The true dwarf variety, the one called Little Moses. You have any experience with it, or have you installed or done anything?
I haven't installed it. I've read about it. I know what it is, but I haven't actually used it.
So it's more around 2 to 3 foot in height.
That'd be
the
nice.
Same spread. So unlike the other one, which is a dwarf, you know, that we're familiar with,
right?
They get rather big, you know, but they can, you know, they can be pruned back heavily.
They can be, yes. And they'll live a long time.
Yes.
But you don't have to have an evergreen
on
the foundation. You don't always have to, but we do, especially in the front. I still like it because this time of year, if you look outside and you only see sticks, it's not pretty. It's not. I mean, let's be honest. So if you had some evergreen in there mixed with it, you really can still have a nice-looking landscaping. And even in the winter, you can still, we just mentioned it, you can have blues, golds, different shades of greens, and this landscaping still looks really nice.
You know, there's a plant that, there's a small shrub, a dwarf variety that I have in my landscape that's been there for, 20 years. It might be 2.5 feet in height and maybe about 3 foot spread.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, you know, it's very graceful, and it's a weeping hemlock.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that specimen gets overlooked often, you know, but it's kind of like on the northeast side of my house.
Yeah, it's got to be protected.
So
Sometimes hemlocks act up.
A little protected, but it's been there for a long, long time, well behaved. I love the structure of it. It's got that billowing effect. It just, just billows out and weeps. That's another nice conifer to have in the landscape as an evergreen.
I think so. And if there's a couple interesting ones that maybe that are definitely overlooked, the Tempelhof cypress and the Kasseri cypress.
Yep.
You know, those are two particular ones. If you want something a little bit unique shaped, typically a slow grower, not going to necessarily, it's kind of weird. It would be hard to use it as the main foundation of like the hedge, like a boxwood, if that's what you're looking for.
Right.
But if you want that little pop of maybe off on each side of the front porch, you want something different.
A different look right there.
That right there would do really nice compared to the traditional Alberta spruces that you see on 25% of the homes here, you know, in Cincinnati.
There's a lot of different things, you know, and that's what's important, you know, as a homeowner, when you're thinking about these things, and if even if you're the do-it-yourself type of person, which you get that satisfaction and gratification doing it yourself, you know, go prepared to a landscaper, to a garden center, to a local nursery with a great mm-hmm. reputation, and try and call ahead of time and schedule some time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you know, when you come in, you know, through the front door, if we're not inundated or too busy, we can certainly help you, but there's times when it's overly crowded too.
Right.
But if you can do that, that really helps us help you, and you can plan it out, and don't try and tackle everything at one time. Stage it out, work on the front, then do the side or do the rear. Do it in stages, and it won't be so cumbersome or over, you know. It won't be overwhelming.
You won't feel the pressure. Landscaping can be fun, and it's very therapeutic, but it also is very stressful. And most of the time it's because you try to tackle way more than you should.
Way more than you should, and do it all too fast, too quick, and sometimes you add too much. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We have to take another break. When we come back, let's talk about some pathways or some sidewalks or paths in the front or in the side or the back of the yard. Mm-hmm. They create interest and will perhaps draw you into a very unique portion of the yard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. Going to be a beautiful day today, so definitely step out and take advantage of the sunshine. A high of 50, and there shouldn't be a cloud in the sky, and I will take that all day long.
Yeah. You know, and I was trying to think real quick just what that plant was that the caller was talking about, the millennial. The Taxus U, T-A-X-U-S, was I saying one that I think, at least that are coming into the nursery now, some of the younger generation like if they don't have a deer issue. So it's T-A-X-U-S, Taxus, because they really are an easy plant. So maybe, you know, that's... Definitely, if you don't have deer, that's a good one.
Did I ever tell you my Taxus story?
No.
There was a customer, she was in the garden center one day, and for whatever reason, I think she lost one of hers,
mm-hmm.
okay, and she'd asked me to get one for her so she could replace it, and I said, yeah, certainly, I can do that. And, you know, it was about a week later, you know, I had gotten it in, and her son stopped in. And I said, Randy, I said, I have your mom's Taxus. I said, will you take it down to her? And, you know, he didn't respond. He didn't answer. And I'm thinking, did he hear me? You know, he was right. Putting things in his trunk. And I said, Randy, I said, I have your mom's Taxus. I'll go get it. And you can take it down there to her. He goes, oh, she's getting a little old. She doesn't really know what she's saying anymore. She's forgetting a lot. And I got to thinking, he goes, nah, she, I said, ah, you're thinking taxes. Like, yeah.
Like federal taxes.
Like federal taxes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what he was thinking. And I was trying to tell him that I had a plant.
Uh-huh.
But when I said taxes, he thought I was talking about her federal income taxes. And it was kind of funny.
Right. You know, sometimes you got to look up and say, no, I mean you. Y-E-W.
Yeah.
Yous. Yes.
But,
so.
Yeah, that's what that was. When you were talking about it, you thought and said, that would be a good plan for the millennials.
That's what we were talking about. So my apologies.
Yeah, a lot of low maintenance, but yeah. But deer love them.
So the deer love them. You got to be careful.
You have to be careful. Yep. Before we went into the break, we were talking about, you know, pathways. And how important pathways really are.
Who doesn't like to take a pathway somewhere?
Yeah. You know, we all like to hike paths and so mm-hmm. forth. And how important are pathways around our homes or in our backyards? And you were talking about the one... it was a landscape job that someone had done. I don't know if you guys did it or not. You were talking about the Sweet Bay Magnolias, how
yes.
they were taller and limbed up, and it had a nice meandering sidewalk.
That was
sidewalk.
A paver pathway?
Yeah, that was
so
a paver.
So that's one type you can use?
That's one type that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
There are numerous different sources of products or things that you can use to create a path. It's endless.
It's endless. You know, we talked about, you know, when we were doing a little bit of a show prep, and I thought, you know what, there's a lot of different paths. So I actually started writing down. We could do an hour.
Well, we can always entice.
Yes.
You know, our homeowners to think about this when they're working in the backyard or trying to create that curb appeal, or when you have guests over. And, you know, when you walk a pathway, and it could be in a woodland site, it could mm-hmm. be around your house, it all kinds of things.
Well, I mean, what's the most common? The most common is probably the pathway to the front door,
a sidewalk,
and that's concrete. Yeah. But you can take concrete and add a little curve to it and not just have the straight square that meander. A lot of people have.
Right.
You know, if you rip that square out and then you put something curved and kind of pretty and let it meander through and then add the landscaping to add depth, even though it's concrete, it's still much more attractive than just the square path.
Right. It's softer, it's more subtle, and, mm-hmm. And it enhances or accents the plants that are around it and vice versa. So,
right. So that's probably the most common. But then what can you change just on the most common one? You can make it pavers. You can make it stone. You could stamp the concrete. You could change the color of the concrete. There's a lot of things you can do just on that simple application. And we're talking about a whole, there's, you know, so many pathways to talk about. But to the front door, typically you want that something that if somebody's dressed up or they're in heels, they can walk fairly easily.
Yeah, without twisting their ankle.
Right.
Exactly.
Without anything. So you're probably not, you can, you know, but you're probably not going to use gravel.
No.
Walk into the front door. It may be a country setting.
Depends on where you live.
Mm-hmm. But on a typical suburban, you're going to have probably a sidewalk, you know. But there are so many types of paths when you start thinking about it. You know, you go up and see Margie, and she's got how many different aggregates and gravels that she could help guide you to use different
now,
pathways.
Now, I'm not a pea gravel kind of person when you talk about pathways because it rolls too much. Water takes it away if you're on a hillside or a right. grade of some sort. It just doesn't really stay in place.
Well, that goes to when I started really researching and thinking about how we're going to talk about it. What's the pathway for? Do you have a lot of drainage? Does it wash through there? Is there a grade you have to go up and down? You know, so there's so much to think about.
Does it lead you somewhere? Mm-hmm. Does it take you to the shed? Or does it take you down into the woods?
Yeah, I mean, and even like in the woods, what are most of the pathways?
Dirt. It's just dirt.
Old leaves that have been composted over, you know. So, I mean, sometimes it's just a dirt path that gets you back there. But let's just say you really have something through the woods. You want to do a landscaping. A real economical one is some mulch.
Mulch.
Cypress mulch.
Would you use like a small nugget pine nuggets?
Pine nuggets are great for pathways. They also really define it. Cypress mulch. I have one customer that we do cypress mulch. I have to actually go touch them up. She wants to touch them up.
Now, which cypress? Not
B grade.
Yeah, B grade. Because
landscape grade cypress.
Because
more barky.
There's float in there. That's perfect for that.
Right. So that exactly. it's a fairly dry. It compacts fairly well. You know, you also got to think if your pathway, like your wheel into the woods, are you going to be taking your grass clippings and wheelbarrows back through there? So you need something maybe solid. Where I've done pea gravel walkways. They're gorgeous, but they move. You know, when you walk on them or you're trying to shove a wheelbarrow through there.
It just sinks into it or you slide with it.
Yeah, it's not right. easy. And a lot of times you got to decide, okay, if I'm going to use this, do I need a border? You know, am I going to border this? I've seen it as simple as people have taken some small cedar logs, you know, and they kind of skinned off the little branches and they've laid that to do the outline of the border of a walkway through the woods. It looks natural. It looks pretty. I've used stone a lot. You know, they make metal edging, you know, so you got to think, what are these pathways going to do?
And I've seen some really neat boardwalks,
mm-hmm.
you know, where people will take the time to create the boardwalk. You know, and the path doesn't have to be wide. It can be wide in some spots, narrow in others, and contour to various plantings.
Mm-hmm.
You can go through or underneath arbors.
Yep.
Or through maybe if you've set up some sort of a hedgerow that's like screening out various things to mm-hmm. walk through it. It's those things that entice you and pull you in to go find out what's down the path.
I had one of the coolest paths I ever did. Do you remember the movie Tomb Raider?
No.
Okay. Well, the lady was a huge Tomb Raider fan and she showed me a picture. She's like, this is what I want. And it was kind of her mansion in the movie. And it was very square with boxwood hedges framing everything. And we actually created a stone pathway. We used 36-inch by 24-inch big square-cut stones
mm-hmm.
that we made a perfect symmetrical pathway. And it all had 90-degree angles with boxwoods wrapping everything.
Oh, it sounds neat.
It was really interesting. It's not for everybody, but it was really a cool pathway. And sometimes you want curves. You know, we mentioned curves are pretty. Well, it's okay sometimes if the square has a design to it and it fits, you know. And it's okay to mix a couple of them.
So would you call that formal?
That'd be very formal.
Very formal.
Because, I mean, we hedged the boxwoods. We had 100 boxwoods, 50 on each side. So this was a pretty big walkway.
So it was like an English kind of garden.
It was an English garden. Yes. Really cool. You know, and then when you do your pathways, if you're going through the woods, you do have to think, what if I have a drainage issue? Well, pathways actually can help steer drainage. You can actually create the drainage right underneath and use gravel and drain pipe and then have the pathway on top. And it really makes it nice.
Now, have
to
you
help
ever done anything with like a stone type of bridge? Like a
oh,
large
yeah.
piece of stone?
Oh,
over
we do that
area,
all the time. Over a creek?
Over an area that you get a lot of water runoff?
Mm-hmm.
That's when that has an application of the sort.
I'll see if I can find a picture and we'll put that up on Facebook. And maybe next week, you know, we can kind of expand on the pathways. And we can put a few pictures up.
But
there.
I think when you create these pathways, you know, I had one. I don't keep up with it. It goes all the way down our backyard down to the creek.
Yeah, yours is neat.
And every year what I would do when I was using pine mulch, when I would replace what I was using, I would take the old and keep that path, you know, set yeah. up to go down the hill. And again, you know, it went down past my fire pit alongside the shed mm-hmm. and through some larger trees.
Down to the creek.
On down to the creek. So you would want to follow it. If you were a kid, you always want to follow the path.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we as adults, it still captivates us. It still pulls us in. And it really creates for an interesting room or look or an outdoor living space.
I do it all the time, and a lot of landscapers do it around here. You're working in the woods and having a pathway through the woods, and you can't see all of it. It's really interesting because you're like, where's that go?
And when it meanders and you can't see the end,
uh-huh.
yeah, it just draws you in.
But there are so many types. I mean, there's so much. There's stone, you know, large pieces. Do you sink them in the ground and mow over top of them? You know, is it just a pathway to right. get around the house? Is it a pathway through the wood? There's so many different types of pathways. Once again, we could do almost
well,
a show.
We will. We'll hone in on that. Then we'll gather some work that you've done, some things that we've seen, and we'll take those photographs. We'll put them on Facebook.
And if people have some that they've used, I'd love to see them.
And when you can visualize that type of a look, mm-hmm. it's enticing. It really is. Well, you know, I don't know where these 3 hours went. It's been a fast morning, and thanks for hanging out with us this morning on In and Around the House, and we'll see you next week.